The cake is a lie.
Welcome to the Negative World Podcast, the podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans and NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 70, and we're recording this on Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. I'm your host, Steven, and with me is my co-host, Joe.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Joe. So, this episode features the same awesome pairing that was on the podcast 6 months ago, which is kind of a funny happenstance. First, we've got Chris, or ChrisBG99.
Your champion, guess that tune, guy returns.
That's right. That's right.
That's true.
Was that the Smash Brothers?
That was just random games, if I remember right.
Well, I think it was the Smash Brothers one, which of course would feature multiple franchises and everything. Huh. And then we happen to have the loser here too. I don't think he'd refer to himself as that, but we have Grant or Game Dad Grant.
Why would I be the loser? Good day, my name's Grant, Game Dad Grant on the boards, and now in this episode I'll be speaking an Australian accent, so our mates from down under can feel right at home.
A few users on the forums are going to love that, I hope.
Yeah, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that the entire episode. I wouldn't do that to you guys.
Yeah, this brings up a good point. We continue to taunt and tease and want to do a accent episode or a different voice episode, but hasn't happened yet.
Crikey.
Yeah, and I do apologize to our Australian Negative World members.
There are several.
Yeah, I'm fully expecting...
Half the continent, right?
Yeah, well, they span both sides. Uh-huh. And I assume I'm going to be getting some giant spiders in my mailbox in the coming days, so I may just doom myself.
If a box moves before you reach it, step away.
Step away. Yeah, well, that's the thing. They hide and wait. They don't move. And then when you think you're all, safe, that's when they pounce. Mm.
All right, so get a sword and stab every single package you get for the next 6 months.
Right. Sounds reasonable. Yeah. Sounds reasonable.
I think because spiders are more abundant than paper there, they just write letters on spiders.
Yeah. It's like coconuts in America because you can ship those. I think you can.
I don't know.
I thought you could. Maybe that's
I've
no
never
longer true.
Thought to ship a coconut.
No,
that
I'm pretty,
sounds coke and nuts.
I guess I never really confirmed this, but I've thought for the longest time that it was possible because of the nature of kind of how robust a coconut is that you can actually slap some postage on it and mail it just as is, and it'll get there.
I'm sure now I'm picturing you just standing next to your mailbox, having sent a coconut and waiting.
Yeah, well, I am a big Animal Crossing fan, so.
True.
Anyway, so last time you guys were on the podcast, all of us, we were talking about Super Smash Brothers, which is kind of funny because that's exactly what one of the major topics is today. It just happens to be after the release date. Kind of can't believe it. This day is here, and that the Wii U version is only not even a month away now, too.
Yeah, this is actually kind of good timing since we're talking about the 3DS version, and tomorrow we're having a new Nintendo Direct about the Wii U version.
Correct.
So you can have a whole new podcast after that direct to talk about the Wii U version.
We probably will. So there's going to be this episode where we focus on the 3DS version. We're probably going to have one before the release, so we'll talk about the direct. And then, of course, we're going to talk about the game itself when it comes out. So it's going to be Smash Brothers for the rest of the year.
Blimey!
So feel free to cancel your subscription to Negative World if you don't like that. And come back in January when there's DLC or something. But...
if you don't like Smash Brothers, what are you doing on Negative World?
That's kind of true. That's true.
Yep.
But then again, I guess you wouldn't be listening to the podcast because the last episode we focused on Matthew Taranto's Brawl in the Family Kickstarter, which in itself is based off of Smash Brothers, so you probably would have left by now. Maybe. But I wanted to bring that up really quick because we focused on that Kickstarter and Matthew last episode. Triforce Bun is his username, and his Kickstarter has now elapsed. And I just wanted to make a note for the history books or whatever, that when he started, he was asking for a measly $56,000, which isn't really chump change, but, you know, it's not too crazy compared to his first one. He managed, after 2,708 people donated their opinions and money, he walked away with a staggering $276,502.
Oh, that's walking around money. Yeah.
Going to Boca.
That's walking around in gold-plated shoes, in gold, not plated, but just flat-out gold shoes. That's more money than Mario what is it?
New Super Mario Brothers 2?
Yes, thank you.
Nice.
There's so many words to that. yeah, no, it was pretty great. He hit the 56,000 before we even recorded that episode. It was like 2 days it took him to get his first, you know, original goal. So congratulations to Matthew, and considering how much content's going to be in them, I'm really excited to be getting mine eventually. I think next spring is when he's shooting for. So, you know, with that, and with the end of Brawl in the Family, which also ended the same day that Smash Bros. Came out, you know, there's some good and some bad, but we'll continue to support Matthew and enjoy his endeavors. So,
I hope he enjoys his gold-plated gold shoes with his gold socks and his gold-plated golden chair.
And his goldfish.
With his goldfish.
Yeah. Okay.
Congratulations, Matthew, seriously.
Yes. We're all very proud of you. So, now on to the show, which has not made any money, but that's okay.
Wah, wah.
Our Kickstarter is standing solid at $0.
At unproduced. So, let's start the show off with, you know, now playing, which is pretty much what the whole episode's going to be, but the bigger games are going to be near the tail end, kind of filling in for the main topic today. We'll start with Chris first, and then we'll go to Grant, and then we'll go to Joe, and then we'll talk to the big games, because I've only been playing big games, guys. I don't play the small fries, you know? All right, Chris, I'll let you introduce the games you're playing. Please let us know.
Well, after Nintendo's, you know, fantastic E3, one of the games that, in their indie sizzle reel that really I'd never heard of, but really caught me was Tesla Grod.
Mm-hmm.
The 2D platformer, Metroid-y puzzle game, puzzle platformer that was nice, had a beautiful animation style and everything. And, well, fun game. I mean, it used a lot of cool magnetic polarity gimmicks that, you know, made it more about, you know, getting around everything. You didn't really have an attack until late in the game.
Really? And, no, that's interesting.
Yeah, you had you could kill things through, you know, manipulation of items,
physics,
but,
and yeah,
but not really through, you know, direct contact.
Now, when you get that item or weapon, I mean, whether it's one or many, but
yeah,
does it really actually affect anything, or do you have to use it, or can you just kind of move on?
Well,
and is there for convenience or something?
It's part of the like last set of puzzles.
Okay.
So you gotta use it, but yeah, it's just kind of like, hey, now you got something that kind of lets you do things from afar.
Right, right. Which changes the puzzles, I'm sure.
Yeah. Let's get through some places easier they had to go through again or something like that. And the graphic style is a beautiful, hand-drawn, or at least hand-drawn looking with, you know, kind of like Boy and His Blob for the Wii, but maybe a little simpler, but it has this, I guess it's Russian or Poland or something like that. Something on that region of the world, kind of art style to it.
Okay, I can see that. Kind of cathedral-looking things in the background.
Yeah.
And looking at a few screenshots here, it does look really nice.
And it tells the story entirely through, you know, mostly just watching things through these kind of funny, sad little puppet plays they have that you can watch. But you don't have to watch them. Just...
Well, there you go. That's a sign of a good game. You can skip that stuff right from the beginning.
If you don't want to, like, you don't want to check them out, and you don't have to.
Yeah, are those scenes, they're kind of done in like a motion comic kind of style?
Yeah, kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it looks really cool, and it zooms in on them and everything. And they continue playing in the background if you go by them again.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it. I greatly recommend it. It's, you know, I think, what, $15 on the...
Yeah, it's been on Steam since, like, December or late last year at least, and then on mid September I think it came out on Wii U for $15.
Yep.
Where are you playing it on, Chris?
I was playing on Wii U.
Nice. Wait, thank you for supporting Nintendo.
Well, I don't usually play video games on my PC, so.
I do, but I'm still thinking about getting this on my Wii U.
Yeah. And.
Oh, hold on. I want to ask one question. You mentioned some similarities to Metroid.
It's more like a kind of. I want to say Metroidvania, but it's more like a Metroid in that there's not as much. It's more linear than, like, Super Metroid.
Mm hmm.
But it's less like. But instead of like a Metroidvania where you're you know fighting things just to level up or anything like that,
do you go from one point to another? Do you get power ups that let you go into new areas in old locations?
Yeah, there's some things like that. Yeah.
So there's some backtracking that leads to new exploration
and stuff. Yeah.
Well, that's definitely Metroid for sure then.
Yeah.
Does the music kind of adhere to that kind of aesthetic as well?
Yeah, it's
or?
Very very moody, sounding. I guess Eastern European-ish. I mean, I don't really know that much about musical styles of the world, but very dramatic.
Nice. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you feel that the story is pretty interesting, though.
It's interesting in its own way. I mean, it's a simple story. I mean, it's not like it's.
So the focus is really on the gameplay, flat out.
Yeah, gameplay mostly.
Okay. I mean, it looks really nice, and if it sounds really nice. You know, it's something that I would definitely want to look into. The style and then the basic, I guess, kind of buzzwords you've hit upon already kind of key me into it.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of looks like almost a colorful version of Limbo, just in the graphical style as well. Like
that's what I've heard.
If you could unveil the shadows from Limbo, and then you'd probably see this, you know. But that's a good thing. In fact, this may look better than Limbo, as long as you're not praising the shadows. Kind of aesthetic from that game.
Yeah, Limbo is very minimalist, I think, on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, super important question, Chris. Off TV play or no?
There is off TV play.
Whoa!
When?
And so, well, that's awesome. And actually, that's a valid point.
I think there is a way.
I don't really play games off my TV too much, but. But Grant, I know that you probably have more experience with that than I do, and so I'm glad you asked that.
Yeah, I think that's always a really cool feature for Wii U games, and I'm always happy when I hear that developers take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes games will come out like 1001 Spikes came out on Wii U, and off TV play was not a thing that was included. I think it may have been patched in later. I don't know if that's been done yet or not, though. But I always thought, especially something, relatively simple, quote unquote, as a 2D platformer, why would that not be off TV?
Sure.
That should always be a thing.
And because the gamepad isn't, almost married to the TV like the two screens of the 3DS are, you really wouldn't see a lot of gameplay, I think, that directly links between the two. Not like, some of the Mario and Luigi games and stuff.
Just because
it wouldn't make too much sense. So you're going to be more likely, I think, to see that off screen gameplay. And you should. That's one of the main selling points of this thing. It's why this isn't a Dreamcast.
So. Oh, poor Dreamcast.
Well, great. I'm actually looking forward to this. I haven't looked into it too much, but I don't think I really need to, based on the screens and just kind of talking to you about it a little bit. I think. I would probably be pretty happy with it, spending $15. It'll be one of those things that definitely goes on my Secret Santa list if I don't buy it before then, this year. But you know what? I guess I'll make a small PSA to interject here. I didn't do a news story about it because I wasn't able to be near my computer at the time, and nobody else has done on the site, but I'm sure a lot of people have heard about this already. Nintendo is offering the ability to buy games for friends and family.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
But not in the way you'd think. I think you go on their website and you purchase a download code, which then you could give to anybody. So you can't necessarily do it from the eShop, as far as I understand it. I don't understand why or what's going on there. But hey, you know what? The list of games that they have available right now is pretty big.
You know why you can't do it from the eShop, Steven?
Hmm.
Because Nintendo.
Yep, because the easy should stand for easy, but it doesn't.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't know, but I guess years of tweeting complaints to Nintendo has gotten us this far, so.
Yeah, hey, this is better than nothing. This is better than nothing.
It is. And last year, our Steam Secret Santa was really successful, and I'm definitely going to look forward to doing Secret Santa this year. And I think what's best is maybe if we do both. You know, you just have to make sure that you're clear on what you can handle so people don't buy you, a PC game if you don't really use a PC or whatever. But I think that we can just mix them together. It just gives us more options, and it's great. It allows people who don't use Steam to be back into the Secret Santa. Because if we didn't do Steam last year, we wouldn't have had a Secret Santa at all. So,
yep, agreed.
I mean, there were some ideas of, buying game cards or gift cards and stuff, and that doesn't really make too much sense, because then in the end you're just trading $15 gift cards to people. And why not just buy one for yourself and go to town, It's better when you don't know what game you're getting, and there's that surprise and fun aspect, and you don't even know what the value is. I like that part, too. Of course, there's a limit, but I like the idea of, maybe if I buy someone a $5 game, maybe I'll buy them another one or an $8, just to kind of pad it out. Why not, or maybe a really awesome $20 game, who knows, which is always a surprise. So it's fun to just not know, and we can go back to that. So, okay, sorry about that digression. Chris, you were playing something else, though, right?
Yeah, I played through Dracula X on the Super NES. Well, technically speaking, I didn't even play it on the Wii U. I played it on a emulator on my Wii. I did buy it on the Wii U.
Oh, we didn't hear that. Well, you said you bought it on the Wii U?
Yeah, I bought it on the Wii U because I liked it a lot on the emulator.
Technically, if you play anything on the Wii or the Wii U, it's on an emulator. Just haven't been Nintendo approved, right?
A legal one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, Castlevania. Everybody knows the story that it's basically a stripped-down version of Rondo of Blood from the TurboGrafx CD version.
Have you played that game as well?
I have played it. I have it on my Wii, too. On the, actual virtual console on there.
So is Dracula X better?
I kind of liked it better.
Yep.
I know some people will gasp at that, but I kind of like it a little better. I was actually able to finish it because I didn't go sick of a terrible boss rush at the end of the game, like in Rondo.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I completely agree with you. I love Dracula X. The Super NES game is great.
Man, yeah, this is turning my world upside down.
Well, there are a lot of people who basically the game gets hated because it's not Rondo of Blood.
Perfect. Well, here's the deal. I mean, I've never really... I just assumed it was like a watered-down version.
It's reconstructed, basically. It's made for the Super NES's limits.
Right.
It's almost a completely different game, honestly.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, yes. I still think Super Castlevania 4 is the best Castlevania ever because of all the movements and stuff. The biggest problem with it that when they made it, they brought back a lot of the limited movement of the Belmonts, can't really have any control of your jumps.
Your whip arthritis in one direction.
Yeah.
Well, that's what makes Castlevania Castlevania. Super Castlevania 4 was not. It's a good game. I don't think it's a very good Castlevania game. I always thought that was like the weakest of all the Castlevanias, personally.
I think it's the best one. So.
All right, Chris, you and I are going to have to settle this in Smash.
Part of me wants to do a Castlevania music quiz on you guys.
Ooh,
they should do that. Also,
that would be tough.
I don't know. I'm not a huge Castlevania fan.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Steven, you just need to play Castlevania.
Yeah, I know.
I know the basic tunes, like Bloody Tears and Vampire Killer,
all the classics.
Well, let me ask you guys this: since it's a new crop of people here, Grant and Chris. What Castlevania game should I start with?
First Castlevania.
Very first one, okay.
You gotta start with the original, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. The first one's good.
It's brutal, but...
If you've beaten... it is kind of brutal. Castlevania 3, I would say, is another good starting spot.
Yeah, I think that's what you said in the thread, didn't you?
Yeah. It's not... It's pretty difficult, but, if you've beaten games like Mega Man 2... Or if you played, something like Metal Storm, or if you've even gotten halfway through Ninja Gaiden, Castlevania 3 won't be a problem.
Well,
Castlevania 3 is easier than those.
My main question is it challenging because it's cheap, or is it challenging because it's challenging?
It's challenging.
Hello from column A, little column B.
Yeah.
Okay. Because
once you learn the levels, once you learn the enemy patterns, once you learn your abilities and what you can do, it's challenging because it's challenging. But learning all that stuff, you're going to be like, wait a minute, this is cheap. Why am I dying?
Yeah.
But once it all clicks, it'll click, and it won't be that big of a deal. All
right.
It's kind of like, you know, Mega Man can't duck and he can't shoot up. Mm-hmm. Like you'll learn that the game is built around those limitations.
Sure.
Same thing with the Castlevania games, which is why they broke Super Castlevania 4 when they gave you that overpowered whip you could go anywhere, that impossible control over your jumps. Ugh, Castlevania 4.
All right, Grant's therapy session on the next episode of the Negative World Podcast.
Ugh. After he gets therapy.
Grant, if you'd like to have like a Grant or Game Dad vents or something like that, we can we can have a segment for you.
I could rant for a good half hour about Super Castlevania 4.
Well, our podcast, pretty
game, I love the music, but it's not a Castlevania game.
The podcast could certainly be an extra half hour longer, I'm sure. Hmm. Yeah? No?
I could do it.
But, Chris, not to digress, so anything else you want to say about Dracula X? Or
No, it's a fun game. It's underrated. It's how expensive as hell on the used market, so get it on the virtual console.
And how much is it on the VC?
Last I saw it being 100, 120, 140 for a loose copy.
Oh, okay. Oh, jeez, that's crazy. Yeah. What about on the virtual console?
Eight bucks.
Yeah, okay.
The music is really good in this game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. That's the one thing that I know about Castlevania is their music is awesome. So that would be reason enough for me to sit down. You know, maybe again, hey, maybe I'll get it for Secret Santa or something, and I have a decent amount of chunk of time off for work, so I'll sit there with a cup of hot cocoa and some Castlevania.
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge?
Maybe.
Yep.
Maybe. if you want to be on the podcast ever again, let me just give you my... Yeah, because there's such a high demand, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's clamoring to get in here.
Yep.
Anyway, you know, before we move on to Grant, there was one thing that, Chris, you mentioned to me when we were doing some pre-discussion. You got a new member of the gaming family, sort of.
Yeah. Well, after kind of thinking about it for a few years and being like, do I really want to do this because it's permanent, I did eventually decided to get a gaming-related tattoo based off the Starman insignia from Earthbound.
Okay.
And kind of based off this awesome sweatshirt I got from Fangamer.net for the location and size.
So it was like a full body tat of a sweatshirt? Oh.
No. That'd be stupid. But it's just the insignia.
Yeah,
and
okay.
It looks, you know, awesome. And anybody knows on the forum that there are like three Earthbound fanatics on it, and I'm one of them. So, I mean, I've had that, my icon... I started using that on IGN back in 2001, so I've been using that for a long time.
About how big is it, and if you dare say, where is it?
It's right. Well, it's on my left breast, and about
woo.
I know boobs. And I'd say about 3-4 inches long. It's I posted a picture of it on the Earthbound game chat. So
okay,
in fancy black and white.
So people can go check it out.
All right. To really hide my pasty complexion.
Your pasty boob?
Yep. Okay. If you want to see a really hairy guy with a tattoo, you can go there.
Hairy breasts in the Earthbound thread.
Yep.
Okay. Well, awesome. You know,
this podcast got really saucy really fast.
It did.
I am sexy.
But not too sexy for your game tattoo.
Nope.
Really quick, does anyone else... ever consider themselves maybe going that route too and getting a gaming tattoo? Have you ever considered that, guys?
I have not.
No, if I would, I might get the Hyrule insignia on my back.
Mm-hmm.
But
across the whole thing, just
yeah,
shoulder kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, actually, that would look pretty cool, actually. I never pull the trigger on that, but if I would...
Well, get you drunk enough and have someone else pull the trigger.
They're a reputable place who will never take you drunk. So.
That's true. So we got to find one that's not.
Yes. End up in a tattoo
place. Grant lives close enough to Detroit. You can find
we can find plenty of CD places.
Yeah. You don't have to drive that far. they're probably set up outside. So, I kind of used to think about that too, but I don't know. It's not so much the gaming tattoo. It would be a gaming tattoo if I got one, but it's just the tattoo in general. You know, I have no idea what I would do. Yeah,
best to think hard and long about it if you're gonna do it.
Yeah.
If you do it like in 2 or 3 days, you're like, oh god, what did I get?
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, Groose tramp stamp for me.
I did come across a guy today who had had an Ocarina of Time tattoo on his forearm.
Nice.
The one where Link's playing the flute and Sheik's playing the harp.
Mm-hmm.
Back.
Oh yeah.
Oh, he's look. Got the whole thing, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Because I guess that would look better than just an actual ocarina on your arm.
Yeah, people might actually be able to identify what it is.
I bet you there's a guy at Comic-Con who's got that, and he actually puts his arm up to his mouth and then pretends to play. That guy's there. Come on.
Totally.
Okay. Enough fantasy. Let's move on to Grant's games, which could be another segment. I like the alliteration there.
Grant's games.
Yeah, Grant's games.
Nice.
Nice. Very simple. Let's start off with Shocktober. You've been playing something for Shocktober 2014, which I'm supposed to be doing and I'm not. So please hold up the fort for that.
So for Shocktoberfest, I am playing through Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, a 3DS title that was released last year, and shame on me, I'm just now getting around to it.
Hey, it took me quite a while too, but at least you're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, there's just my 3DS backlog is just ridiculous. So I'm glad I was finally given, finally given a chance to play this game that I bought a year ago. It seems like a perfect time to play. It's right around Halloween. It fits the mold of Shocktoberfest. And hey, it's actually a really fun game. On top of it, I never really played much of the original Luigi's Mansion back on GameCube. I got through probably around the third or fourth boss character.
In the GameCube one?
In the GameCube version, yeah. And then, I don't know, I saw something shiny and I got distracted and then I ended up never going back to it. I have no excuse. What I played was fun. So I was a little hesitant about starting Luigi's Mansion, even though I knew I wanted to play it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I haven't finished the original Luigi's Mansion, I went ahead and jumped into the 3DS game. And it's actually really good. It's a very well-made game.
Mm-hmm.
Developed by our Nintendo's... Are they second party, or are they just like a third party that works exclusively with them?
No, I think
them?
They're second party.
They are second party. Next Level Games. Really, really fun game. The graphics are really well done. The 3DS's stereoscopic 3D makes the game really pop, no pun intended. The audio, I felt, is really well done, too. There's all kinds of like little like noises. Whenever Luigi, examines something, opens a drawer, looks in a vase, looks through a window, vacuums up anything. There's all these like cool little like very well-recorded sound effects for mm-hmm. every little thing that happens in the game. Luigi's footsteps as he walks through, various mansions, his footsteps will change depending on if he's on, on grass or if he's on a hardwood floor, if he's on carpet, if he's walking through, sand or whatever.
It's a headphones game for sure.
Yeah, I've been playing this game. I play most of my games exclusively on headphones anyway, but yeah, I've been cranking it up. This game is really, really good sounding. Sounding good. It's good sounding? Well, it sounds good.
Let me say one quick thing, not to cut you off, but
sure.
Next Level Games is not second party, and I know that if I let that go too long, people are going to be like writing posts as they listen to the show.
Yes, watch out for the internet.
To correct that, they're not, at least based on the games that they've put together. Oh, damn it, I should read Wikipedia better. Because their history, they've worked on games for all sorts of different things, platforms. But on January 9th of this year, they announced that they will work exclusively with Nintendo in the future. So they are now effectively second party, but they still might be a third party company.
Okay, So Nintendo doesn't actually own them. But
no, which would I guess that would be second party, right? Yeah. So they're a third party, like you said. you know, who only works on Nintendo games now.
Well, I'm glad they were doing that because they make good stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. The what else did they work on? They worked on Punch Out.
Yep.
That was really good on Wii.
And Dark Loose's Punch Out. I mean, like the both, you know, the WiiWare and the Wii game.
Yeah, yeah.
Super Mario Strikers Charged.
Yes. Yeah, that's Super what they're Mario famous Strikers. For, right?
Yep.
Yep. So they do really good work. They do really good work, and Dark Moon is no exception. And you know, I think they kind of suited this for the handheld pretty well. Unlike the original GameCube game, where you're just exploring this huge mansion, and it's there for you to explore, and you're always in that one huge, you know, almost castle-like mansion.
Mm-hmm.
This one has you, you know, going into the mansion through, you know, Professor Egad's new pixelator, you know, teleportation system. And you go in there, you complete a mission, then he'll zap you out. You come back to like this safe house bunker area, you know, add up all your loot, and then say, okay, here's the next thing you have to do, and he'll teleport you back in. So it works really well with, you know, with the handheld gaming. You pick it up, play it, put it down again. It makes it a little bit more disjointed compared to the original one, which I think fans of the original one kind of took issue with.
Mm-hmm. It was a turnoff for me at first, like crazy.
Oh yeah,
just the concept I didn't care for, but that changed over the course of the game.
Yeah, yeah, I'm finding that I really like the pacing of it, and because I can go in there, do a mission, jump back out, save it, and then, you know, jump into some other game, it works really well with me. And the only thing that is kind of weird about it, you know, I said it works really well as a handheld game, but one feature that's not in it, which I find really is an odd omission, is that there's no quick save. Like, yep. You can only save after you do a mission.
And those things take, I mean, probably 30 minutes if you kind of blow through it. They could take up to an hour.
Yeah, so far my average has been between 15 and 20 minutes.
Okay.
Never so mind maybe, me. No, well, maybe I'm just running.
No, no, you know, maybe it is more like, I would say more like 20 minutes maybe would be fair for just kind of a running through, but maybe, I don't know.
But still,
are you looking for every gem and everything?
You know, I'm finding them as I go. You know, I'll see for things to vacuum up, like a poster hanging on the wall or curtains or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not just running through it, but I'm not looking through every nook and cranny either.
Okay.
But I mean, still, 20 minutes is 20 minutes,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, of course, you know, 3DS, if you know something comes up, you have to go, you have to leave the game. You can always close it, goes into sleep mode, pick it up later, and that's fine. But still, you know, your friend, you know, IMs you or something, say, hey, do you want to, you know, get online and play Smash Brothers? What do you do? You have to quit out of that entire mission, even if you're like already 12, 15 minutes into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to redo that all again.
I mean, you can't even check like a street pass, something simple, right. You know, I mean, you just, any, leaving it at all besides the browser. Yeah. Well, you know, you lose your progress.
Yeah. But, you know, other than that, I mean, it's a really great game. Looks good, sounds good, you know, plays really well. I have to admit, this is another thing too. It's really intriguing, Luigi's Mansion, and this is one of the things I think Nintendo fans have kind of come to enjoy and kind of expect out of Nintendo, is that there is no other game that plays quite like Luigi's Mansion, or even kind of like it. It's a really unique product, and because of that, it's kind of makes it even more special than it would be anyway, just because of how well it's developed and created and, you know, presented to us.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, kind of like, you know, in some of Nintendo's other games, like, you know, Pilot Wings or Punch Out, I mean, there's really no other games quite like those. I think that's kind of, you know, kind of special thing for Nintendo.
Yeah, I think Next Level Games pulled off what was originally a dual analog game pretty well on a non-dual analog system. Just the gameplay perspective in that regard is pretty unique. The package overall is definitely unique, too. I think I underrated it when I first was going through the experience. And it is one of those games that I would probably recommend as one of the top of the system.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good and really unique. I mean, there, you know, people always say, you know, they want Nintendo to do something different with their games. Check out Luigi's Mansion. Unless you played the original one, you haven't played anything else like this.
It expands on the original one pretty well, though. I mean, the original I beat within a handful of hours. I beat it the first day I had my... Or, No, it took me less than 24 hours to beat the game, but it was across the evening and the morning of the first weekend in which I had my GameCube. So it was a pretty quick playthrough, and they really did just kind of they cleaned up the graphics, of course, and they cleaned up the gameplay and they expanded on the gameplay. It's a definitive version, I'd say. The only thing that they're missing perhaps is like the emphasis on booze. They have all these other ghosts. I mean, there are booze in the game to suck up, I think, one per stage, maybe. But it was kind of fun to find the little booze throughout the big mansion of Luigi's Mansion. And then, you know, and that actually has a relationship to the story. And the booze in this one, I don't think, did so much. They just happened to be ghosts that were, you know, part of the hijinks, like the rest of them. But
yeah, kind of. The booze I found so far, there's one per mission. And in order to unlock, like, a secret special mission within that same mansion, because everyone knows there's multiple mansions in Dark Moon. Once you find all the booze in each one of the missions, then you get another mission to add on to that. And the booze actually been pretty interesting so far. They each have, like, different personalities. They have little different quirks and attack methods. Mm-hmm. So, they've been kind of interesting so far. They're not just, you know, like the mean greenies or the, you know, the red, like, brawler ghosts that you find.
Mm-hmm.
And each time you find one, it's kind of like a scenario, and, you know, Luigi really it's like a showdown between Luigi and the Boo.
Right. Yeah, they kind of let the arena empty out before the Boo shows up, so you're not focused on other things.
Exactly.
Now, I'm pretty sure when you and I met up a few weeks ago and played some Smash,
yes,
I mentioned to you that you could jump while sucking in ghosts. I think that was the first time you heard that. Have you kind of used that mechanic?
I did, yeah. Actually, against the first boss,
yep.
Okay. I had to use it. It helped me out of a sticky situation.
Yeah. So then you can probably appreciate then why I was pretty shitty about the game initially, because I didn't know about that till I got to the end of the fourth mansion that you could even jump while sucking in things. And so that first boss frustrated me to no end because I didn't jump ever.
I could imagine, yeah.
That I was so soured on the game for a while. And then after I forced myself to get to the second mansion and then and that boss, I realized, this is a lot better. So I'm glad I did that, and I really wish it was more apparent. Maybe it is. Maybe I was just really clueless, but that was such a key, like, misstep, and it almost ruined the game for me.
Yeah, well, I definitely appreciate the heads up on that, because that helped out a lot.
Mm. Well, we were sharing beers, man. I mean, you share... You share good tips when you're sharing a beer.
Yeah, the secrets come out after a couple.
That's true. Gaming and otherwise, right?
This is true.
So anything else you want to mention?
No, I just got to the third mansion in the game. Still really enjoying it. And, you know, if you haven't checked it out already, anyone that's listening, check it out.
Agreed. And so you're playing one other thing, though. Right now,
yes.
3DS wise.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, I was mentioning how good the audio is in Luigi's Mansion. The other game I'm playing right now, Theater Rhythm, Final Fantasy Curtain Call, also has really good audio, which is good since it's a music rhythm game. This game is really, really fun. It's awesome, I think. It's a sequel to the original Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy, which was released, I think, in 2012, a couple years ago. It was a retail-only game for the 3DS. Curtain Call is both retail and available on the eShop. And on the surface, it kind of looks like a, you know, pretty standard, you know, music rhythm game. You know, you tap on the screen or a button in time with the music, and you just play along with the Final Fantasy music. But if you dig a little deeper, if you get under that, you know, first layer, there's so much more to this game. It's kind of crazy. There are three different main modes. There's the song mode. There's a you know, multiplayer versus mode, and a new expanded single player mode called Quest Medley. I'll talk about the song mode first. I'll try to run through these as quickly as I can. So the song mode, there are two main parts of this mode. The first one has you in these kind of like mock battles called BMS, which stands for Battle Music Scenes. They basically look like classic Final Fantasy battles, You know, you're on the screen, heroes are all lined up on the right, enemies are over on the left, and as the music plays, you'll attack each time you successfully hit the right note at the right time.
That's kind of like the first game, right? That was kind of the main mode of that.
Right, exactly. Okay. Yeah, and each time you miss a note, you'll take damage, and you know, of course, the goal is to make it to the end of the song before getting knocked out. And these sections always feature, you know, battle or boss music from, you know, the Final Fantasy games. And then the second part is something called Field Music Scenes, the FMS. And it'll show your main character walking across a 2D field with various, you know, map screen music playing. You know, the notes will go across the screen. You need to properly tap in time to the beat, the on-screen cues. And each time you miss a note, you'll take damage. And just like with battle, the battle scenes, you just want to make it to the end of the song before you get knocked out. And then there's a third one as well called Event Music Scenes, which so far have focused on the more modern Final Fantasy games. They feature those like full motion video cutscenes, or maybe several cutscenes mixed together from various Final Fantasy games, basically since the PlayStation era, with all those like CG full motion video sequences that got sprinkled throughout the adventure.
Right.
So the scene will play like on the top screen while notes and directions are scrolled across on the screen, like overlaying the video.
Are those videos just as mind blowing as they were back then?
You know, it's kind of mind blowing to see, like, you know, Final Fantasy 13, like seeing PS3 and Xbox 360 level graphics on the 3DS. Mm-hmm. But that's about it. So those are kind of cool. It's kind of hard to pay attention to what's happening within the scene while you're playing the game. But once you finish it, it'll unlock that video. You can watch it in a separate mode within the vault. I can kind of get to that later, but there's like so much options in this game.
Is that kind of maybe some of the point is to... Because it's kind of busy. It's a busy background unlike the other two, so it's kind of one of the harder... You know, it's the harder mode to do because not only do you have this... perhaps maybe a more elaborate song because it's in an event, but you know, you have that all that stuff going on behind you.
Yeah, it's a little distracting, and I will say I get my worst ratings in those scenes, so you're probably onto something there. But you know, the music's always really good, and oh my god, there's so much music in this game. There's over 220 songs just on the cartridge itself.
Wow.
It's ridiculous, and it covers at least all double the Final Fantasy games.
Yeah, it's got to be at least double the first game.
It's more than double. I want to say the original only had like 80 on the cartridge.
Right, 13 games times at least 3 songs. That's not that much, and then there's a bunch of other bonus stuff. So yeah, probably you're right. Probably less than 100 on the first game. So
yeah, and this one, the original one only counted the numbered Final Fantasy games.
Mm-hmm.
This one's got everything. It's got, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics. It's got, you know, the Chocobo's Dungeon. Crystal Chronicles.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the first thing that you or anyone has said that's really made me kind of want this thing. Because I have the first one, and I enjoyed it enough, but I didn't play it too much with headphones. And I got distracted by shiny objects, as you know happens. And but I've considered, you know, maybe, you know, since this game I think includes a lot of the old songs too. Which were pretty good, you know, I mean, maybe I should pick this one up. And if they have the tactics games and other kind of more niche things that offshoots, but are just as great as any other Final Fantasy game, then that's a big sell.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, one of the Final Fantasy games they feature on it is Mystic Quest, which was on Super NES. And that's kind of seen as like this kind of offshoot, like kind of a redheaded stepchild kind of Final Fantasy. But man, the music in that game is really good. Like, I've never played it before. I've only experienced it through Theater Rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, the music in that game is really, really good. Maybe some of the best Final Fantasy music on the Super NES. Might be fight words. I don't know. But it's... Yeah.
Tell us in the comments.
It's really solid. And please don't send me hate mail. Thank you.
Send it in the comments.
Yeah, but anyway, Curtain Call has tons of new stuff. There's the two-player versus mode, which I mentioned. That is both local and online.
And that's brand new, right?
That is brand new to Curtain Call. And basically, it's a battle sequence, except instead of fighting monsters, you're fighting another player. There's more control options. So in the original, you were limited, you know, quote unquote, to the stylus mode, where you would do everything by tapping on the touchscreen. And this one, you can use that, you can use buttons, or you can use a hybrid of buttons and the touchscreen.
Now that's another awesome thing to mention, because the tapping controls were pretty solid on the original, but it was frustrating when you were damn sure you did it right and you didn't get the full points for it or the full hit.
Right.
And so, you know, in my experience with Rhythm Heaven and Rhythm Heaven Fever, I definitely prefer the button press if I can help it. It's a little more accurate, you know. At least when you're tapping on the very screen that you... Well, actually, no, because you don't tap on the actual buttons in this game. The top screen is the action. Bottom is kind of your tapping area, which I think was a smart thing that they did.
Right.
As opposed to you trying to, like, you know, tap on little action dots or something. But, yeah, still, I think it's a smart move for them to have allowed you to have the control. I'm glad they didn't change it, like, entirely and just not allow that touchscreen stuff. You know, the options is the best way.
Right. Yeah, I always preferred the stylus controls with that. And, you know, Square made a really good decision to put it on the 3DS because it has that second screen. I actually downloaded the free version of Theater Rhythm on my iPad. And that one, you actually have to press on the screen on top of the action. Mm-hmm. And that gets really distracting. And it makes it kind of a worse version of the game compared to the 3DS original. Mm. But anyway, I digress. That's iOS. This is Nintendo. The other third thing that's new to Curtain Call is something called Quest Medley. And this is kind of a longer expanded version of the game. It kind of puts you on a full map screen. And your character starts on one end of the map, and his journey is to make it to, or him or her, you can choose what, you know, a huge variety of Final Fantasy characters. And you make it from one end of the map to the other. So it's kind of like long quest. You can, you know, well, and there's various lengths of mission too. You can go through a short mission, which would take only like maybe 10, 15 minutes. Medium, which would take maybe twice that. And then long missions, which can take, actually, I don't even know how long it takes. I haven't tried it yet, but it's considerably longer from what I've seen in the previews and stuff like that. You can also pick and choose which songs to play in the song mode. There's three different kinds of modes to play, three different difficulty settings to choose for each mode. There's tons of stuff to collect. In the Final Fantasy characters, which is what makes this game pretty unique in the music rhythm genre, is that you level up your characters as you play. You can equip them with, you know, weapons and armor, items, summon stones. And as they level up, you can equip certain attributes to their characters so they can perform certain actions, summon certain monsters during battle, and other things to kind of help, you know, boost their stats as you play through the game.
Hmm.
Pretty cool.
Sounds like they thought a lot about all this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is a really content-filled game. Square really stuffed this one to the gills, especially. And this is the final part. I know there's a lot to. I'm kind of rambling here, but there's so much to talk about this game. They put a lot into the Street Pass features.
I'm just gonna ask about that.
Yeah. You can, you know, there's a Street Pass feature in the original one, and they kind of crank this to 11 in this new version. You can Street Pass another character, another player, and when you get that, you can kind of go into your Street Pass menu, and it will reveal kind of a startling amount of information about the player you just Street Passed. You not only get their Chaos Map, instead of a Dark Note song, which is what you traded in the original game,
mm-hmm.
This Chaos Map will kind of add to your quest medley, give you different songs to play. But you can also check out their player profile, which includes, and I had to write this down so I wouldn't forget it all, their byline, which is what they use to describe themselves. This one guy, it kind of takes a whole bunch of adjectives and nouns and kind of strings them together.
Mm-hmm.
The one guy, Street Past, is described as an elegantly one-winged guardian, and it kind of mixes all that kind of stuff up, and you know, you can kind of make it your own as well.
Sure.
It shows you how much arrhythmia you've collected, which is the currency in the game. It shows you what their preferred control style is. how many trophies they've earned, how much time they put into the game, their progress in the game out of overall, as well as their personal message. You know, you can kind of like, in a normal Street Pass, you can kind of say like a personal greeting to somebody.
Right.
You can do that in this game as well. You get to see their top three most played songs in the game. Breaks it down to the top songs used in battle mode. You can see their current party, their top characters used overall, what parameter boosts they've performed, as well as the number of cleared songs, number of perfected chains, total number of quests cleared, how many collector cards they've obtained, shows their ranking in versus mode. I mean, you learn so much about this person in one Street Pass. You know, total number of battles they've had online, how many offline, their win-loss ratio. It's crazy. It almost feels like I'm giving away my ID when I Street Pass somebody.
Just don't make your blood type your special message.
And, right? So yeah, I mean, there's tons of stuff to do, and the more Street Passes you do, the more content you add to your game. You know, on top of the, you know, over 220 songs already on the cartridge. You know, there's a lot of bang for your buck in this. And then on top of that, if you want to, there's even DLC. You can download, you know, new characters. Some people, like, I don't even know who this person is, like Orlandio from the Final Fantasy Tactics game, Rosa from Final Fantasy IV, and, you know, Orin from Final Fantasy X.
That's kind of a funny, I guess, just advertisement for the DLC. You're like, hey, there's DLC. You can download people you don't even know. All right.
And all DLC is 99 cents each. Go out, buy now.
Yeah.
You can even download, you know, I think there's a couple of Chris's favorite characters, like Cloud and Yuffie from his favorite Final Fantasy, which is Final Fantasy VII. Is that right, Chris?
Go to hell.
I'm trolling you.
I kid. Go to hell. I don't remember that.
But it is my favorite.
It is actually Joe's favorite. Yeah, it is Chris's anti-favorite, if I remember
and
correctly.
I've never played it, so I stay out of this.
But and there's also music, of course, for DLC as well. Stuff from Type Zero, which is a PSP game only in Japan. 10-2, Tactics, like I mentioned. Even some weird stuff like that cell phone game, Last Order, which is part of the Final Fantasy VII collection.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was ever released in the West or not. They might have been Japan only.
Yeah, sounds right.
Stuff from Final Fantasy Fables, which was a Wii exclusive. And they also added a couple of non-Final Fantasy game songs, like stuff from Romancing Saga 3. I don't know anything about that. I haven't downloaded any DLC, but just like the characters, 99 cents each. Go out, buy now. There's 41 songs to purchase at this time.
I'm sure that'll just keep growing.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll probably be more updated tomorrow during Nintendo's download thing, where they update the eShop and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they did that for the first game for a while. Every week, there was just new ones.
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of content, tons more games. Looks really cool. You know, again, the 3D stereoscopic stuff looks really cool. The art style is very, you know, charming, very colorful, very cute. Sounds awesome, plays fun. This will keep you going for a long time. I highly recommend this game.
All right. That's a glowing review, that's for sure. A glowing description.
Go out, give Square your money.
So, are we good to move on? I mean, I think you hit every point there.
Yeah, I don't think I need to talk anymore about that game.
Okay. All right, well then let's go to Joe, because I'm sure he's got something that he's been playing that he definitely needs to talk about. Tell us. What have you been playing,
Yeah.
Joe?
Let's stop talking about this crazy Nintendo stuff. Let's talk about some PlayStation.
All right, what episode, what show, what are you on? What is this podcast that you're on? What's it called? Isn't that a Nintendo reference?
PlayStation.
Yeah, I thought that's what it was.
Yeah, we stopped being Nintendo exclusive like episode 2, so that's okay. So this is an original PlayStation though, right?
Yes, PS1. We're talking about the Jumping Flash franchise, which contains both Jumping Flash 1 and 2.
Oh, that's surprising.
Yeah.
quick poll to the guests. Who here has heard of or played this before?
I have played both of them.
Wow. Woo! Okay, Grant?
All right.
Hey, matey, what the hell's Jumpin' Flash?
That is a no. Okay.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I never heard of them before myself until a YouTube video last night, and continue.
Yeah, so for those who aren't familiar, Jumpin' Flash is a 3D robotic rabbit-based shooter slash platformer in the first person view. Really kind of a one-of-a-kind game, but at the same time really was like a really cute console version of almost like a Doom or Descent kind of game. I mean, it was like one of those first-person shooters, but they, you know, before the genre had really like carved out its own kind of like, here's what you do in this genre, you know, so it was the rules weren't as established yet. So the primary way that you move around in this game is, you know, your character, you play as kind of this like tank, right? This robotic rabbit. And you can shoot with one button. You can use special weapons with another button. But a lot of what you do is based on the third button for jumping.
Well, this is first person too, right?
Yes.
That's an important. I'm sorry if you just said that and I blanked, but when I was looking at the videos of it online last night, I thought that was really fascinating. For being such an old game, it predates, you know, Mario 64. And, or at least... No, yeah.
Did it? I mean, it's probably around that time, but I know it was very early PlayStation.
The first one released was a release game for the PlayStation.
Yep. Right.
And so, the second one released just before Mario 64 came out, I believe.
And okay, so wow. To do, like, a first person perspective of that kind of pseudo 3D. It looks a lot like Mode 7 almost, I think.
It's full 3D.
Yeah.
It's jumping almost kind of works like how they did for Metroid Prime games, you know, where you kind of...
Right.
That's a good point.
You get a view of your landing area.
Yeah, you know, the video that I saw, the guy or girl who was playing kept kind of looking down as they were landing.
It automatically points your camera down. It's pretty... DualShock, so that it's not dual analog.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
And it gives you a nice big shadow to work with, so you know where you're at.
So, Joe, I'm sorry for changing the subject on you, but how's the gameplay really feel? I mean, this must be kind of tricky.
You know, I gotta say, the fact that it points the camera down automatically for you, what can I say? It's not nearly as tricky as it sounds, because when you think of you know, what's required and what we just described, you would think that you would constantly be, you know, just jumping off of edges without knowing. And, I mean, make no mistake, this really is a game that is based on platforming. I mean, it's a lot of making careful jumps, at least later on in the game. That's where what little difficulty comes from. In the game, these are not the hardest games in the world by any stretch of the imagination, but it just works. It just works really well. I think because the actual physics involved in the jumps are very finely tuned, so like you will very quickly just kind of know just by looking at the distance between two platforms whether or not you can make the jump, or if you have to try to find some intermediate level, you know, to get you up there higher or whatever it is. So yeah, it works very comfortably. At least that was my experience. Chris, was it the same for you? Did you find?
Yep, it worked really well. The jumping, I was almost kind of skeptical of it because, you know, it's first person jumping, but yeah, you knew exactly where you're landing and how far you had to go. And you have several jumps to work with too.
Right, right. That's the other thing. Yeah, you get basically three jumps every time you leave the ground. So once propels you off the ground, and then you get two sort of boosts in the air, should you choose to use them. So the setting of these games is very, very cutesy, very, very Japanese, as they say. If you hadn't picked up on it by the fact that you play as a robotic bunny. The villain of the game is kind of like a very much like a Dr. Wily type character, only even more comedic. Like, he wears a Hawaiian shirt, and his minions are all these little squid aliens, and his purpose is to steal, like, interesting or fun chunks of the planet and then pull them out into space to use for his own private resort. So you, of course, are trying to prevent this from happening, or rather undo this.
They don't make games like this anymore.
Nintendo, the only company that makes games like this is Nintendo, and maybe an indie game might make a weird premise like this.
Do you know what's so amazing? And I don't know if we actually talked about this in like the last chat or something, Chris. But I saw when I was kind of like researching these games since I was playing them again recently. Yeah. There was a game for, I don't remember what platform, it was just like some early computer platform or something like that. But it was by the same team, same exact people, and the gameplay was almost identical, except that it was like serious. So it was like real world, quote unquote, cities in the future, obviously. But and you were in a mech that was kind of had like long legs to jump with, but it was like totally like, you know, serious, or at the very least kind of like anime serious, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really, but it was just such a great idea to put this really creative, fun twist on it. And you know that it's that goes throughout the entire game, because your enemies are like, you know, you'll fight like just like frogs with top hats and like you know, like construction workers, and some of the bosses are just crazy things, like one of them is like this clown and stuff, and it's just it's all over the map, goofy, silly, fun.
Yeah, brought to you by Sony, back when they were actually trying to make creative games.
I know. I mean, I just... Stuff like this is, you know, really why I was enamored with Sony and the PlayStation in the first place, you know, during this era.
We miss you, old Sony.
Yeah, pretty much.
It didn't last very long. They kind of realized that they had they needed to hit the...
Yeah, the bread and butter was elsewhere for them, yeah. So as Chris mentioned, this is not a twin stick game. It's before that. So you are able to kind of like aim independently of your movement, but you have to hold R1 to do so. Luckily, the fighting is never really so hectic or fast paced that you need to rely on that. It's almost like a luxury, I found. And the way that you get through the stages, you almost don't even have to fight enemies if you don't want. Similar to, I guess, a lot of other games with an emphasis on platforming, you can basically just run right by them, jump right over them if you don't want to. I should mention the structure of the stages. So there's 6 worlds per game, 3 stages per world. The first one, you kind of, so in stages 1 and 2 of each world, you have to collect 4 of something before you can leave the stage. In the first game, they're like these giant carrots, and they kind of represent like rocket boosters or something that you're going to use to like propel the chunk of the planet back down to Earth or something like this. And in the first stages of the worlds, there's also a bonus area that you can play. If you find it, you get an extra life if you do that. Stage 2 of these worlds is usually basically just like stage 1, only there's no bonus. And sometimes they are very corridor-based. So sometimes the second stage of these worlds kind of removes this huge jumping mechanic, which is so integral to the whole rest of the game.
Yeah, they're the weakest stages in the game by...
They really are. Because it, I wonder if they were like hedging their bets, if they thought maybe people wouldn't enjoy the jumping as much, but that they would more closely relate to this more Doom straight up experience. I don't know. The only thing that I do really like about the corridor based stages is they tend to go really in depth with almost like the way that the fiction of these worlds works. So sometimes in these corridor-based stages, since you're like moving around the inside of like a secret base or something like that, you'll just get little glimpses into the world. Like you'll see like parts of unused robots from this evil mastermind, or you'll see like sunken ships and go through these corridors underwater that kind of double back through places you've already swam through, so to speak. So I do appreciate them from that perspective. And then stage three in each world is a boss. The bosses most of the time are pretty darn easy. You know, most of them, I would say, if it takes you more than three tries, your controller might be broken, you know? So, that's the gameplay. The music I found very, very good. It's reminds me a lot of Sega music from that era. So to me, I would liken it to a mix between like early Sonic the Hedgehog and like Jet Grind Radio, which I think says a lot. Now, Chris, did you, I forget your exposure to like those kind of 90s Sega soundtracks and stuff like that, but would you say that it was that's a pretty good parallel?
It's been a while since I've actually played the game. I can't exactly remember the music that much, but okay. I remember it just fed the mood really well.
Yeah.
You know, cheery and cartoonish and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Just really upbeat, energetic, and fun. And a lot of times it'll be like, I don't know, like every now and then there might be like some kind of like little, like some vocals, so to speak. But it'll just be like a group of children shouting a word or something like that. Which I think just adds to the kind of whimsical nature of the game.
Well, you haven't mentioned the names of these, the villains of the game.
Oh, yeah. Well,
they're awesome.
Okay. So the main antagonist, the Dr. Wily, if you will, his name is Baron Aloha.
Nice.
Which I think goes along with his Hawaiian shirt. And kind of just his, like, his desire to basically just be on vacation forever, right? Like, that's kind of his, that's the, you know, again, going along with just what is so fun and whimsical, like his mad scheme, you know, sure, he's breaking up the planet, but it's just because he wants to, like, have an awesome resort and then just kick back for the rest of
the day. I think
that's
something we can all relate to.
Yeah, totally. And then, Chris, I'm sure, would you like to do the honors and describe the villain from the second game?
The second game villain, as I like to describe him as, you've all played Katamari Damacy, right?
A little
or
bit.
Or heard of it.
I don't remember what version it was. But
well, he reminds me that he is, the, I think, the King of the Cosmos' brother, Captain Kabuki.
Yep.
There's a like giant a spaceman.
He looks like a giant banana. First
yes.
Of all, right. Yep.
He's amazing.
He's like going back to the comic books. He reminds me of Galactus in his size. He's
yes.
Like he can hold a planet in his two arms, kind of thing. And I don't even remember why he wants to break up the Earth or whatever
it's
just it is.
He's kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably it. I would really love to hear the Japanese version. Like, I always wonder sometimes when a character has a really, really wacky voice in something that's dubbed, if that voice, I wouldn't be surprised either way. I wouldn't be surprised if the original Japanese is just as ridiculous, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it's like this really deep, very serious kind of voice, you know, like, you just
I'll bet
know.
You it is. I'll bet you it is.
I mean, it could be. I mean, I just, yeah, you never know. So the reason why I'm even playing these games these days is because I had the first game, I mean, you know, from when, you know, when I first got the PlayStation, yeah. And I had always just kind of been like on the lookout for the second one. But obviously never enough to just like hunt it down. So it was just like anytime I would go into a retro game store, look through the PlayStation games. Oh, do they have Jumping Flash 2? No, they don't. Now, I don't think it's a particularly rare game. I mean, I picked it up for $15, but it was just never in the stores that I was in. So about 2 weeks ago. I was in a retro game store I hadn't been in before, and there it was. So I picked it up, and I thought, well, I should probably play the first game before I play this one, just to have more to play, really. Because they don't take very long. I mean, you can beat either one of these games in a afternoon, really. Probably the only two things that are really unique about the second game compared to the first one. The first one, once you beat it, there's this whole like master quest where you kind of, you know, the levels are rearranged slightly and you play through them again. But the cutscenes are all the cutscenes are very similar. The words might change, and if you beat it the second time, you get like the real ending. With the second game, though, when you do the master quest, so to speak, the entire plot, it basically just continues. It's almost like it's just like one huge plot where you had to play through the same levels two times. And I won't spoil it for all those who are, you know, just haven't quite gotten around to Jumping Flash 2 yet. But it's pretty neat that, like, even when you load up the game on your, when you're playing the second quest, like, even the subtitle on the main screen changes and the announcer, you know, reads the subtitle. It was just a really nice touch. It really made going through the second round even more fun. And the other unique thing about the second game is it really kind of introduces this almost achievement-like aspect to it. And these are not the most meaningful achievements, but it's just something where, you know, like if you go through the level and if you like kill a certain number of enemies without touching the ground, like just bouncing on them without touching the ground, then you kind of like get this little stamp. And I think there's 12 of them to get. And Chris, did you manage to get those while you were playing through the game or what?
I can't remember. I think I got pretty close to completing them all, but.
Okay. Because here's what I'm wondering about. Because one of them is beating every type of enemy in the game. And I'm wondering if you have to do it like in one sitting or if you can, you know, turn off the game, save and come back and still get it. Cause if it's that way, I might be able to do it. I still am actually on like the last world of the second playthrough. So I haven't technically beaten it yet. But if you have to do it all in one sitting, I mean, I could still set aside an afternoon one day and do it, but, certainly going to be a lot tougher. So,
this game's sort of ahead of its time. It's got jumping in the first person before, you know, Metroid Prime. It's got achievements in the early 90s. It's crazy.
It's got robotic bunnies.
Revolutionary.
It's got everything.
And I mean, even like, as if all this wasn't like cute enough, you have this little like AI buddy that is in the cockpit with you, and basically, that's how the game communicates, like, you know, if you're close to running out of time or how many more of these things you have to find in the level before running to the exit and stuff like that. So, I don't know. It's just all kinds of crazy fun. And
all this stuff you're talking about, you just, again, it bears repeating. You know, everyone, we all miss you, old Sony. We all of us miss you. Just,
yeah.
Please,
they're at least
back.
Trying things.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. I would, I mean, I would just, I wonder who owns the rights. Just make another one. That never happened, though. I did actually, I looked up, there is actually a third one of these games that only came out in Japan. I'm interested to find out if the mod chip that I put in my PS1 all those years ago, if it's still, you know, soldered enough that I could import that game and play it. I don't know, maybe worth a try to find out.
This bears investigation.
Yeah. Now that game, oddly enough, not called Jumping Flash 3. Oh no. It's called Robot Mon Dieu.
Of course it does.
Of course. So who the heck knows, but that game looks even more adorable, so.
Was that game also rated KA?
KA? That sounds so familiar. What does that mean?
That was the E before before there was E.
Yeah, wow. K-A, kids to adults.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah,
just
I guess
the box art has the old thing. It's funny.
Yeah, that's right. Huh. Awesome. Anyway, but so that is my experience with Jumping Flash, and that is all I've had time to play. So,
it's nice to see you getting, you know, some fun out of old games, especially when they're not, you know, just the classic Nintendo games we always love. You know, it's something. Although you had experience with this game beforehand, but
it's certainly outside the usual.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, especially this day and age, that it still holds up for you, is what I'm
saying. Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, truly, truly. I mean, I wasn't sure, but it absolutely did. For me, it absolutely did.
This might not be high praise, but for a non-Mario 64 early mid-90s 3D platformer, it's up there.
A lot of adjectives in that sentence.
Yeah, I think it says that on the back of the box, I think.
Well, what other choice did you have on the PlayStation at the time? Bubsy 3D?
Oh.
Oh, God, why? Bubsy, why would you
3D.
Bring
okay,
it up?
I got to change the topic then if we're going to go there. I mean, Joe, are you all set then?
I'm good.
Yeah.
Let's jump to the next topic.
Very nice. We'll do that in just a flash.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Sticks the landing.
Impressive, sir.
So we're gonna jump ahead a few years from Jumping Flash, and you know, go to that year 2014 where Hyrule Warriors came out, which is what I've been playing. It was quite an awesome, I guess, week span because was it the 27th or something like that? Around then, Hyrule Warriors came out, and then a week later, Smash Brothers came out. So like, I had an awesome game for my Wii U, and then upcoming was an awesome game for the 3DS. And I'll tell you, I believe I said this on the podcast, but maybe I didn't, because, you know, we had the Brawl in the Family episode, and we didn't talk about other stuff, but I was not sold on Hyrule Warriors initially. It took me quite a while. I got into it almost a month after they actually had that Nintendo Direct about it, because it took me that long to watch it, and I was that unhyped to where I didn't even want to watch it right away. Didn't care. Mm-hmm. I sat down, I watched it, and I was kind of convinced, and now that I've played it, it's a lot better than I expected, and I think that's the general belief that I'm hearing from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it is a Dynasty Warriors game, which to me really holds no weight because I never played them before. However, I can get the gist of it, where you hack and slash your way through tons of enemies, and that's kind of the point. It's not like a traditional Zelda game where there's a little bit more thought going into these enemies. But that's not to say that this is brainless either, because there is strategy. You got to find your openings on the harder enemies. There's some stronger grunts, but then there's also tons of just characters that you come across. And it pretty much mixes hack and slash awesome gameplay. Just pure fun. I mean, again, even for being a little mindless, it's just fun and addicting. Mixes it with the Zelda franchise, which is a smart move, because there's so much great lore in the Zelda world, and this borrows through a story plot. It borrows from Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, and Ocarina of Time, and then it takes all that, and then it mixes in something that it can get me sometimes, is collect-a-thoning, because there's tons of things to collect in this. All big enemies, or even decent enemies, will drop materials, which you use to upgrade your characters. Your characters also upgrade through leveling, and I don't know, there's no clear like XP system. Like in Pokemon, you know exactly at any given time how many more points you need to get to the next level. Here you just have a bar, and you just get there, and it hasn't felt too slow or anything as I've gotten to the higher levels. I am at level 70 with Link, and you know, that's alright. There is a mode where you can kind of jump ahead to by paying a little cash, spending some rupees. I'll get to that in a minute, though. But you know, the story mode, I got through in just a weekend. I got it. It was at my house when I got home on Friday, that Friday from work. And actually, my nephew was here, and he was like, "Oh, what's this?" And so we kind of dabbled in it, but we didn't really play it hardcore until he left, and then I kind of dove into it. So Friday night, Saturday, and Saturday morning / maybe early afternoon. That's all it took. And the mode, the story mode isn't really that short either. It's just, I mean, there must be like 13 to 15 levels, I think. So, you know, I just played a lot of it. I found myself wanting to play the next level and finding out what the next location was like, the next music track, the next enemies I was going to encounter. and it wasn't too hard. I mean, I was playing on normal mode, so it wasn't too hard or anything to get through. It's my understanding that hard, or even the very hard, or whatever, the hero mode, whatever they call it, is definitely up there. But it was just so fun. It was not too challenging, but it was just very fun. And that's a win for me. Now, there's another mode that I want to mention called Adventure Mode, which is pretty much, I think, the real game here. Story mode is great and all, and it allows you to unlock some things, and you get introduced to the different characters. There's a few new characters like Sia, who is the busty lady who everyone kind of got an uproar about back when her cleavage first hit the internet. But there's her, and then there's... what's her name? Why can't I
Lana.
Think of... Lana. Thing. I knew it was an L, but I knew it wasn't Leah. So yeah, Lana. There's Lana and Sia.
And, Lana!
These are kind of the two main new characters, and how their story intertwines is kind of interesting, and just very fun all around. They're both great characters, I think. Even if Sia's motivations are kind of unclear and or pointless, but so are many villains in video games. I don't really get too worked up on that. But anyway, so the adventure mode sticks you in the original Zelda's map, and you start in the same square that you started back in the day, or rectangle, and it is a challenge. I think it's like defeat 300 enemies in 10 minutes, which when you're at a low level, which is probably the case when you start, is kind of tricky, and you get rankings on it based on how many enemies you kill, how fast you do it, how much damage you take. Those are the three primary categories. And so you, depending on how you do, I think in that one, if you can get even a C, which is this is the lowest you can get. As long as you actually complete the thing, you'll get a C. And when you do that, the square above you, to the left of you, and to the right of you opens up. And you can then move. And you kind of just start opening up the map. And as you do this, you'll find... you know, a new scenario in every single square, and if you complete those squares, you'll earn items, which you can use on the map to then unlock secret items. So there might be a bush you burn in the original Zelda, and you might be on that screen. If you use a candle on that exact bush, you'll open up a special, you know, weapon for a character, or a heart piece for a character, and then you have to, of course, beat that challenge with that character to earn that item. So there's a lot of replayability. And because there's so many different challenges, you don't really feel like you're just going through the motions all the time, even though some of the challenges can be similar. But between, you know, the various maps and the various characters and the various moves, it really doesn't get that stale. At least it hasn't yet for me. Even though I've used Link a lot, because I kind of wanted to get one overpowered character at this point, and just kind of make sure that if there was something I was stuck on, I could at least use him. And that doesn't even work all the time, because now most of the areas I need to open up in adventure mode require Ganondorf, and he's not weak, but I don't know, he just plays differently. I can't just hack and slash. He's a little bit slower, he's a little bit more calculated, so I need to I guess work up my general attack so I can be a stronger, even, you know, with each hit, since I can't hit faster. So there's a lot more strategy than you'd expect here. There's some bosses which you fight both in story mode and in the adventure mode, and those typically are pulled from Zelda games, the old Zelda games, and there's like King Dodongo. He's the first one you come across, and of course you throw bombs in his mouth to defeat him. That weakens him anyway, and then you hack and slash your way through. But there's Manhandala, or however you pronounce that. That thing's a pain in the ass. That's the... it's like a four-headed plant. Well, not really heads, but there's the Goma, which, you know, big guess on how you defeat that thing. But you know, I won't even go into the further details, because there's some enemies I'd like to keep secret until you encounter them. But it's really fun, and what I like too about the gameplay is not just collecting items or hacking and slashing, but there's a lot of strategy, because the levels are designed to have keeps, and this is a staple of the Dynasty Warriors series. You've got caves, caverns, pathways, they all link up to different keeps, which are just square rooms. And generally, those are held by the enemy. As you clear out enough enemies, a keep boss shows up, you take care of him, he's usually pretty easy too. Then suddenly it's your keep, and your guys show up. And yeah, your teammates are kind of mentally, you know, deficient. They don't really do much, but... They can, if you amass enough keeps and checkpoints in an area, their strength kind of grows, and then it prevents the enemy from coming back into that area. There are raid, I forget what they're called, raid leaders or something like that, where they'll run in with a small group and they'll try to start infesting your keeps some more if they get a chance to, or if enough time passes. And so it's a bit of a balance between taking out keeps, fighting enemies, and making sure that your areas are cleaned up so you can continue on without risking losing, say, your allied base. And if you lose that, then you might lose the match. If one of your supporting characters runs away, then you know, you might be out. For instance, you got to protect Sheik. And Sheik is kind of just as brainless as some other characters, really. I mean, the AI is not the greatest when it comes to helping you out, but you might be all the way across the map doing your thing, and then Sheik is in trouble. You have to run back, hopefully in time to save her, and then continue on. So there's a bit of a balance. You can't just do each checkpoint as it comes, because they're throwing multiple checkpoints at you at all times, which require you to kind of manage yourself. And it's not like Pikmin where you can, you know, say, hey, you guys go here, I'll go here. It's always just you. You're a one-man army. And then you've got a supporting army around you. But I'm finding myself loving the heck out of it. You know, I was on a few trips recently, some, you know, for work and some for recreation. And at some point, at least, I was kind of thinking to myself, oh, I want to go home and play some Hyrule Warriors. I'm having, you know, fun doing whatever I was doing, but I still want to just get another box opened, you know.
That's the mark of a good game when you're pining for it, even when you're not playing it.
That's true. It is true. When my work computer has it as a wallpaper, that tends to be a sign as well.
Why would you do that to yourself? Now you're just taunting yourself by saying that,
I know,
look at this awesome game, I can't play it right now.
No, but there's just such good art sometimes linked with this stuff. I mean, I've had Xenoblade. Right now I have a Smash Brothers screenshot. I had a Hyrule Warriors.
Well, at least you have quality art to look at.
It keeps my mind out of work mode, which is not what you want at work, I guess. But it allows my brain to occasionally see, like, oh, hey, the day does end. I do get to go home and enjoy something after this, you know.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
You know, when my Outlook accidentally minimizes, and I'm like, oh, ooh, ooh. You know, I remember that. Yeah, let's do that. So it's not so much a matter of, you know, taunting myself as reminding myself of sanity. But, it's a lot of fun. There is off-screen mode for you, Grant.
Excellent.
Yeah, and when you're playing in TV mode, you use the touchscreen to, or at least you can, use the touchscreen to select your items. It's very, you know, intuitive and something that we haven't, or that we have seen before, but it's good that it's there. But when you're in off-screen mode, you just use the D-pad to select, and it doesn't take too long because there's not many different items to use. So all the functionality is still there in the 2D, or in the, the off-screen mode. It's come in handy, you know, when I've wanted to play it while watching TV, or if my nephews wanted to do something on the TV. And sometimes I just feel like playing on the small screen. So that's really great. And
I guess the Wii U gamepad is a smaller screen by comparison.
Yeah, really.
To like your TV, because I look at my 3DS. That's you know, a small screen. The Wii U gamepad, that's like a monstrosity in comparison.
Right, right. But you know, for all the, you know, HD graphics you're trying to fit in there, and the draw distance and everything, you can see everything very clearly.
Yeah, I really like the look of Wii U games on the gamepad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a nice screen. It's a nice screen. And games continue to look nice in it. You can also use the gamepad for two-player co-op, which I was able to do recently, too, and that's pretty fun.
Does that make things easier, or does the computer kind of adjust accordingly?
I think it's technically would just make things easier. You're free to select a different difficulty if you want to, but I don't think that really changes. It just adds a second player. And what's been nice about that, from just being an uncle, and I'm sure any fathers, anyone who has younger children who want to play this kind of game with them, can attest to, you know, my nephew, he's getting to an age where he can handle video games on his own, especially more complex ones, but he still kind of he won't be able to grasp the different challenges he needs to do, especially when they're throwing all of them at you, you know? He's going to want to just hack and slash and do... He might be able to do one thing, but he can't focus on a bunch of different stuff. So what's nice is we can play together, and we can communicate. Actually, me and my oldest nephew, we were... I mean, he's able to read the maps really clearly and understand where he is in the game world, so he's like, okay, well, I'll go to this keep, and I said, okay, well, I'll go to this one, and we were able to spread out a bit more, which means we could start playing the harder levels, because when I was letting him play by himself, I kind of told him, hey, go to that one. That's an easier one. I wouldn't tell him it was easier, but I would say, try that one, try this one. And, of course, he thinks everything's cool, so he was all about whatever I showed him, but we were able to actually do ones that even I hadn't finished yet, and I could use him to help support me. And then my younger nephew, who is he's like 4.5 now, he's not too much of a gamer, so he was pretty much, he was hacking and slashing, pressing the same button, not trying to do any combos or not trying to do any special moves, just kind of hacking away, and then he wouldn't be able to keep himself oriented on the map all the time. And so even though it's kind of like having the AI there, because he's not the smartest little dude as far as this game's concerned, but...
Hey, 4.5, come on.
Right, exactly. Nothing against the kid. But it was great because he could still feel a sense of accomplishment when he was attacking any enemies. And then when we win, because I would, you know, do whatever I could to ensure that, in most cases, he would feel the gratification still that he helped out. And so it's a great bonding experience. Just nice. Between me and my nephews. And I love a game that'll do that because, you know, I don't have my own kids yet. I'm looking forward to it, but it's just not on the agenda right now. And so they're at the prime age, I think, where we can really bond over Nintendo, just like I grew up on Nintendo at their age. So that's been a really nice thing. And the two-player co-op with the TV and the screen are what make it possible. If it was split-screen, I don't think it would be nearly as enjoyable.
Yeah.
So,
Steven, you are doing it right.
Thank you. I will say, though, that I did experience a little bit of frame rate chugging in the co-op mode, but it was very minimal, and it was only when pretty much as many enemies as you could imagine were on the screen, or maybe like a really intense boss. That was on like both screens at the same time, even. So it's not too bad, and it's not, honestly, a game-breaker at all. So I would definitely recommend anyone go out and play this. It's a great solo experience, I think. I think it's a great co-op experience.
Is that co-op online too?
I don't think so.
No, yeah, it's not, is it, Chris?
No, there is a sort of venture mode is sort of a online component.
Yeah,
I'm
not
really sure how it works.
So you haven't dabbled in it too much?
Really. I mean, I finished the main game and stuff, and I enjoyed it, mm-hmm. but I wasn't as enthralled as you are. I mean, it was. Dynasty Warriors never been a franchise I'm interested in, and adding a Zelda code, you know, said, oh, I'll buy it.
Had you played Dynasty Warriors before?
I've never played Dynasty Warriors. I knew the concept, but yeah, so I thought, I'll buy it. It'll do me until the next Rio edition comes out.
I can attest, though, that I may be somewhat persuaded by the fact that I just don't have a game of this type. And it is a perfect time for me as a gamer to have a game of this gameplay and this kind of style. And the Zelda skin, which it does feel more than a skin, because all the weapons and attacks and everything are all designed around the Zelda lore, and it's not just like some weird lasers that you see and then, oh, that doesn't make sense. In fact, in the DLC, Epona is a weapon. And I haven't even used that yet. But, I mean...
What?
Yeah. You don't ride on Epona as just to get around the board or the levels, but she's actually your weapon. So,
wait, what does that even mean?
Are you swinging a horse around like a?
No. I'm guessing Link is probably riding her actually at that point. Maybe you do ride her around her, but there's another weapon I don't want to say because it's one of the unlockable ones, and that in itself is almost like a new character, and Link just kind of stands to the side. Because it's just such a big kind of big thing, and but it's a great example, and I wish I could tell you guys. I don't want to spoil it though, but it's in the lower left hand side of Adventure Mode's map. I'll let you know that so you can go hunting for it. But there is a lot of flair with the Zelda franchise, and I think that does help me because if it was Dynasty Warriors, I wouldn't be nearly as interested, and I wouldn't have given it a shot. I'm sure I could go enjoy Dynasty Warriors game, but when I'm not unlocking, you know, when I'm not earning rupees and I'm not unlocking an ice arrow or a whistle or a harp that I have to use on little fairies to unlock, you know, the enemies of a adventure mode square. I mean, there's so many little touches, it just brings me my Zelda fix before the real Zelda comes out. I hate to say it, because it makes it sound like I'll let Nintendo get away with anything, but slapping a Mario coat of paint or a Zelda coat of paint can help. I mean,
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I never would have played a golf game before Mario Golf. Yeah. And now I'll give other golf games a chance.
Well, so. And like you were saying, it's not just like they're putting on a Zelda coat here. They're building a game around the Zelda lore with the, you know, the gameplay hints of another
inspired
franchise.
By
this, right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not copying, it's inspiring by.
Yeah.
I think it succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a shame that Chris isn't as goo-goo for, you know, goo-goo-gaga over this thing. well, that's a baby's term, I don't know.
No, I just...
Cuckoo for Cocoa
Puff? Not quite as interested.
Cuckoo, yeah, Google, I don't know. What's that?
I'm just not as interested in just playing and opening up everything, because...
Yeah, forever. And that's something that I've had in my blood since Banjo-Kazooie, so...
He likes his collectathons.
I do, and it really depends on... It depends on the collectathon, though. I can get very bored with them sometimes, but when it's got kind of the right aesthetic, like Banjo-Kazooie did, or even Donkey Kong 64, I'm an advocate for that game.
Mm. Interesting.
I'm like one of three, but...
right.
But it definitely works for me, and I'm glad I have it, and I'll definitely be playing it in full force, at least until Smash Bros. Comes out on Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see myself playing it, you know, even further, because, you know, we'll talk about this more in a future episode, but, you know, there's DLC for the game, and I pay the $20 for that, and they're going to be releasing different packs for the next maybe 6 months, and they just did release one. It's a whole new map for Adventure Mode. It's the Master Quest map from Zelda 1, and now that, I don't know how interesting it'll be. I haven't dabbled in the actual challenges yet, so I don't know if they're really going to be different. If they're not, I can see that just being exhausting, especially because the map itself isn't any different. It's just, you know, where you maybe use a flame on a bush might be different, but that's not going to entice me as much as I'd hope. But there's supposed to be other adventure maps coming too, so if they have a Link to the Past, maybe I'll be interested in that. You know, that would be kind of neat. And
hey, by the way, I wanted to ask you, in the adventure mode,
mm-hmm.
do you go in the labyrinths or the dungeons, or are you just always on the overworld?
That would be cool if you could, but no, it's just all overworld.
Okay. And does it play like old school Zelda? Like, you can only attack like up, down, left, right?
No. The map itself is more a selection screen. And when you use a weapon on something, say you use a candle on a bush, you select the candle, and then it takes you to that screen you're on. You select the bush, and then it does a little animation of Link burning the bush. And if it's correct, then the bush will go away and a staircase will appear or whatever. If you don't do it correctly, then nothing happens and you just lose your candle. So you don't get to freely roam that world.
Oh, okay.
So, and that could kind of diminish it a little bit, but just being in that world and kind of immersing that in the classic Zelda theme song and everything, it still works for me.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, but yeah, I guess that's all I got to say, really.
Wait, one more question.
Sure. Yeah.
So, if people were upset with Sia because mm-hmm. of her outfit,
right?
Were they upset because they could see her boobs?
Oh.
Huh?
What a question.
Huh? Huh?
Yeah,
Sia, I have...
Is the play on words with... No.
That deserves a...
I actually did have one more, slightly more serious question.
Mm-hmm.
Or serious, come on.
I know, impossible as it may seem. Do you think that... I guess, regardless of sales, or no, let's assume sales are good for this game. Do you think that we would see a Hyrule Warriors 2, or do you think that this is like one time only? Like, does it seem like this is setting up for a, you know, like, hey, maybe we'll do more, or does it feel just like a one-off?
It feels like a one-off.
Yeah.
And I say that because what they're borrowing from are pretty much three of the biggest...
Everything.
3D Zelda games. I know Majora's Mask is not really represented too much, but there are some relations to that. You do see the moon, for instance, at some points, as an attack, which is pretty sweet. So there is some reference to that. They could expand on these game references some more. You know, you don't really fight in too many areas that you see from Skyward Sword or too many unique locations from Ocarina of Time. But I think, you know, they have so much in there already. And then I think the DLC packs might be their way of kind of doing a sequel without doing a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they're going to release different weapons and characters. They've done a free DLC as well as the paid. And the free DLC so far gives you three of the enemy characters from the game as playable. So they're really expanding a lot of that to give you options. And I can see that this just being the one time. Because they would kind of rip off themselves if they did a sequel. It wouldn't feel fresh enough, I don't think.
Right.
And there's so many different moves and weapons, and I mean, you could take time to imagine all new weapons and all new everything else, but I don't think the gameplay would feel any fresher.
Right. Well, I mean, the big reason I ask is because I really like the worlds that were created for the Oracle games and Link's Awakening, and okay. I feel like to visit those in 3D would have been really interesting, and I think that those would have been maybe a little brighter and cheerier than some of the other Zelda landscapes. So
well, that sounds like a great WiiWare title or something. You know, it would be like, great to go back to those. Even if it was in 3D, that'd be kind of neat.
I mean, the problem with that, though, the reason why they went with the mainline 3D games, that those are the ones with more characters, more or less. You couldn't really. It's kind of hard to pick a character from, like, A Link to the Past to throw in there. There's not really a whole...
Your uncle.
Your uncle, yeah.
Dude, he got...
There really isn't that defined character, like, in Ocarina of Time or Twilight Princess.
Yeah,
or...
there's a lot more of that. Even though, and I guess this is a spoiler because it's an unlockable character, but, I don't know. It's not that big of a deal, guys. It was shown too well beforehand. But Agatha, you guys remember her?
She's a what? Where'd they get her from?
Yeah, I mean,
by her.
Yeah, it was really random. Out of all the Twilight Princess characters, they chose her. She has no fight in her anyway, really. But in the game, yeah, I mean, she's actually not too bad in the game. But you know, who knows? But they do have more to select from, like you're saying, in the 3D worlds and. That's probably that, and then the fact that the assets kind of already exist. Like, we already know what to expect from seeing the moon or Agatha. If you were to start making 3D versions of all these 2D objects, I think that might not necessarily succeed.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, Zelda games didn't really get defined characters outside of maybe Link and Zelda until maybe Link's Awakening, where they, you know, started with Malin being Marin.
Marin
being a, you know, the first non-Zelda female character, pretty much.
Yeah, to have some great impact.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't even remember what the names are, but like, don't the kind of spirits, the three main spirits get kind of like personified in the Oracle games?
Naru, Auror, and
Din.
Din.
Or, Din.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Din, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, they could have.
They could have those guys. Yeah, those characters in, probably.
And then there was that, like, dorky wizard guy. Oh, and that witch. Who's that? That witch?
Mabel?
Yeah, there you go.
Now there are more, but I don't think there's...
This is a whole game on its own.
Yeah, I could see that, though, Joe, becoming a different kind of game.
Oh, yeah, it'd be goofier.
But, yeah, they would have to mix in the style
from
Wind Waker.
You know, well, going back on Grant's joke about Sia of her boobs, whatever you said.
The joke was so bad he can't remember it.
No, it was so great that I locked it away early and in the memory bank. The Great Fairy, which shows up in this game, in the story mode, primarily. She is pretty much finally realized is what all of us probably saw back in Ocarina of Time, but this is what she meant to look like. Because she's, you know, she's much more curvier. She still, you know, has the big chest and everything.
Not as triangular.
Yeah, but she's got way more polygons. And it's just funny to me because I feel like that's exactly what we all thought we saw back when we, you know, before we realized that Ocarina of Time, you know, doesn't have the greatest graphics. It looks nice still to this day, I will say that, but it's not, you know, it's aged.
It's a 16-year-old game.
Yeah, right. So this is what they were going for in the first place, and it's just funny to me that that she showed back up.
Yeah, considering they'd kind of gone for more solemn style fairies since then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, and speaking of fairies, this one has her name starts with a P. Is her name? I can't remember. Exactly. Proxy, I think.
Proxy, yes.
Yeah, Proxy is your Link's fairy, and so you don't see, like, Navi. There's no hey, listen, or anything.
She talks for Link.
Yeah, exactly, because Link is a quiet force. In fact, that is one of the big flaws of this game, I think, is that there really isn't... I think I'm remembering this correctly. There really isn't voice acting. There's a narrator.
There's kind of a bored-sounding female narrator.
Yeah. Who reminds me a lot of Karen Gillan a little bit. Like, I'm a Doctor Who fan, and she's got that show Selfie on TV or whatever, right? So she's kind of back in the limelight. It sounds almost kind of like a Scottish accent, but then it's not. To me, anyway. And that throws me off. But, yeah, there's a random... In the story mode, anyway, there's a random narrator, and that's really it. So... It would have been kind of cool to see full voice acting with this title. It would have been the perfect time to do it, too. But anyway, that's Hyrule Warriors. I definitely recommend you guys go play it. If you can get it, you know, for any price. I paid full price happily for it, but if you can get it for cheaper, it's even worth more. So, yeah.
Cool.
Anything else? That's it?
Nope.
You guys good?
I'm definitely going to get it someday. Probably over Christmas break or something.
You should. And
oh, yeah.
Hopefully you're as psyched about it as I am.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been planning to get it for a long time now. I know I'm just not going to have the time, so I don't want it to tempt me just yet, but definitely soon.
You know, so I'll end this on another PSA. I had the help of a bunch of people in the Hyrule Warriors thread with this, but there's something called network links. And in the adventure mode, if you make sure that you turn this on, you might have to go into your settings to do it, but I think it's supposed to ask you initially. And I must have hit no at first because I didn't have it for the longest time. But other links, and it's barely any information, but you'll see other people from Miiverse, from your friends list, show up on your map. And if you beat one of those levels with that link there, and he's a certain level, and that may relate to what the what your friend's actually at for Link. But if you beat that, you earn a really cool, hyped up level weapon. I'm sorry, you know, a very powerful weapon. So a level 3, which I think is the highest kind of weapon you can earn. So definitely make sure that's on so you can do those, because sometimes the network links are even in the easier stages, and while the enemies are definitely harder to take down, or there's more of them, anyone who's been working through Adventure Mode would be able to do at least those. And so you suddenly get a nice weapon for Link or for someone else, and then you can start kind of using those to help yourself get farther. So very important.
Sweet. Good advice.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, we'll take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back and finish this out with Smash Brothers. Back, and we're in the final bulk, which is probably the smallest segment we're going to have here, actually, just because of the way timing's working out. But before we get into Smash Bros. 3DS, I wanted to mention, as a prelude, that I have been kind of supporting and posting a Super Smash Bros. Stages bracket to the forums the past few weeks, and I really hope that, you know, everyone out there had fun with it. By the time this is out, I'm sure we'll be kind of wrapping up, if not done, with the actual bracket, because we're about to go into the Final Four. And even
it's October Madness.
It is October. Well, it was a good. It's been a good amount of time since we did the March Madness, which was awesome in itself, and I think really necessary. I'm kind of curious to see what happens next March if Jargon takes the initiative to either do a new version or even kind of see if our opinions have changed over time. You know, just to see what happens there. But I thought this was a great way to figure out what is the best Smash Brothers stage. Instead of doing polls or anything like that, I figured let's just randomize this and see what happens. And of course, randomizing gives you a bit of a, you know, if this matched up with that, it would have won kind of thing. And in theory, I guess the best one's supposed to come to the top. And, you know, we'll see if that comes to be true. As of right now, the Elite Eight finished up last night, voting-wise, and what remains in that Elite Eight is Corneria from Melee and Brawl, Kingdom 2 from Melee, Great Bay from Melee, Hyrule Castle from Smash 64, Brinstar Depths from Melee, Foreside from Melee, Peach's Castle from Smash Bros. 64, and finally Saffron City from Smash 64.
Fine stages, all of them.
Yeah, I will say that they've beaten out some of my favorite picks, and I'm kind of bummed. In fact, Joe, this is his last podcast, because his vote happened to knock Pirate Ship out of the running, and I did say before voting was done that if that happens to be the last vote that does that, this podcast was done. So thank you all
for
listening.
You did say something like that, yeah.
Thank you all for listening. I'm glad you're enjoying our last episode here. Because,
we had a good run.
That was not cool, Joe.
Well, but if it makes you feel any better, I could have gone either way. So,
boo this man. Boo.
Well, that's... Ugh, damn it. Don't even say that. You better emphatically fucking love Saffron City, man.
Oh,
do not say that. Do not say that you could have went either way, because there is no alternate timeline I can visit where Pirate Ship made it.
It's the saffroniest city in the whole game.
But that said, even though you were the last one to put the nail in the coffin, had you not voted, we would have had to go into a tiebreaker, and also, had you voted 3 hours earlier, I'm sure that you wouldn't have been the last vote. So I can't be too pissed, but, especially when I was the one reminding you to, hey, make sure you go vote, you know?
Exactly.
So I brought the beast that possibly ruined my desires, but that's okay.
Saffron City is the one with the crackhead.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it is a good stage. It was up against my favorite, pretty much probably my favorite stage, which was Pirate Ship from Brawl. So, anyway, I wanted to ask you guys really quickly three quick questions. We'll do, I guess we should, I'll ask each question to all of us and then move on to the next one. We'll get through this really quick, just want your thoughts, and then we'll go into Smash Brothers talk. So first, of the Elite Eight, do you think that it represents efficiently the best of the best when it comes to Smash stages? Chris?
No.
Okay. You know, and this can be like a what do you think? We can just kind of leave it at that. Grant?
I agree with Chris. No.
Okay. Joe?
No.
And I agree. Which is interesting, because it's like, well, how did this come to fruition? I guess what that would tell me is that opinions are very diverse.
Yeah.
And the voting has been that way. I've actually been tracking who has voted exactly like the results. And
interesting.
Grant's even had a few wins there. In my final post, I'm going to post who got the most of those and that kind of thing. I'll vote show the breakdown. But, you know, it's especially when there's more voting going on, it's a lot harder to do that. But versus, you know, like maybe two pairings versus four. But it's incredibly diverse.
It's kind of hard with the breadth and the depth of the kind of stages that are in Smash Brothers across three games.
Yeah, over a decade of
Smash Brothers. And narrowing them down to eight. I mean, there's never going to be enough there to, you know, really say this is the best of the best.
No, I would almost be very fascinated to just do this again, like in 6 months, and just randomize it again and see how the new setups are and just see if we get a completely different answer. You know,
right?
But this is a lot of work, and I'll take a break. So, it was a lot of fun, though. Okay, so let's move on to question two. Then, which stage is the most egregious omission here? I've kind of said my piece, but Chris, which one do you think really needed to be in the top eight?
Fountain of Dreams from Melee and Brawl.
That's a good one.
Yeah. That one is, I think, the best stage in Smash Brothers.
I don't think I voted for it every time, necessarily, but I do like that one a lot. I love the just the aesthetic of the whole thing, the music, and it's a good
one. The music's great.
It's a standard stage. There's no like hazards to worry about. It's just kind of a basic, but in a good way. Because I think those got underrepresented in this voting. There always had to be like a catch. If there wasn't, I feel like it didn't get as good of a vote record. But that one is a great one. Grant?
Where's Poke Floats?
You know what? Neither Poke Float made it past the first round, I think.
Also, Smashville. What the hell?
Yes. Now, that was probably a pirate ship-esque moment for me when that didn't make it through.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It is too bad. Yeah, so many good ones. I can't believe this. Are you guys... I guess this is a 2.5 question, and Joe hasn't even answered it yet, but are you surprised that there's no, like, Brawl native stages here? Or, I mean, why do you think that is?
No, because Brawl was kind of not that great.
Yeah, I mean, I still think Pirate Ship could have made it, but the discussions that we've had over these stages kind of do show that maybe Melee had the... like a really solid set, and N64 actually had some really great ones too, but I feel like there's a bit more nostalgia going on there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You know, just to verify, yeah, Poke Floats did not make it through the first round, and Poke Floats 2 can't find it. I don't think it did either then, if I can't find it. So...
I think people really don't like moving stages as a general rule, which is kind of too bad.
Oh, wait, there is no PokeFloats 2. I'm thinking of Pokemon Stadium 2, right? Oh, no, there was right. A PokeFloats 2.
Was there?
I think so.
I thought there was only that one from Melee.
Gosh damn, I have to look at the actual text list because I can't remember. And the images are kind of small on my thing here, but you could be right. Yeah, I think you're right. It's just that there's two Pokemon Stadiums. Anyway, so you're right. Moving stages tend to be less favored, and that's been a repeated comment in all the threads. Okay, so back to question two, Joe, really quick. What do you think is the most egregious omission?
You know, here's the thing. I know this is supposed to be really quick, but I actually don't even want to like give a vote. If I was to say what I thought was the most egregious omission, I would probably say like a Pokemon Stadium, I guess. But the thing is, I don't feel that strongly about Smash stages, you know?
Boo!
So the title screen was the biggest omission?
No, it's just like
the sandbag training area.
I like them all, and there are some that I don't really like. And that's pretty much it. There's not really too many. Like, I liked Fountain of Dreams. I was glad that came up. And then probably one of the Pokemon Stadiums. And that was probably if I was to really have to try to choose. But.
Okay, final question, guys. Which stage do you think should take it all of these 8? Because we're stuck with what we got, right? I was surprised that Foresight honestly made it so far in.
Yeah, that was a bad stage.
How did that get that far?
What
that good a stage?
It's, you know, I guess it's a matter of what it was put up against. I didn't vote for it.
I think Earthbound fans voted for that one.
Well, I would have thought that Onnit would have made it farther. But, you know, I mean, they didn't get a chance to be up against each other. But but still, so which of these stages, then, would you pick as what you think will take it all?
Corneria.
I was going to say Corneria. I want Brinstar Depths to take it, but I'm pretty sure everyone's going to vote for Corneria.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hoping and thinking Great Bay could, but
that is a cool stage.
Or Saffron. As much as I hate to say it for Saffron, I think one of those two is going to do it. And that, well, yeah, Great Bay is Melee, so I'm thinking Great Bay will.
For my pick, it would be Brinstar Depths.
I'm glad to see the love coming from you guys, though. I don't really have your voting records in front of me, but that's the one that rotates, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there were some people kind of bad-mouthing it, not enjoying it. And I can see where it may not be the most traditional stage, but I always liked the wackiness of trying to adjust to a stage that's essentially four stages in one.
Yeah.
And two of them are very thin. You know.
Yep.
So, yeah, very cool. Okay, let's move on, because we're running out of time. So, Super Smash Brothers 3DS.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing that exists.
It's a game!
I guess that kind of sums it up, so okay, thanks.
It is the best game out right now.
Yeah, it's an incredible game. I'm loving the hell out of it. Grant, I know you are.
Yes.
I'm really glad you and I, the day after it came out, got to sit down and play. And like I said, drink beer and enjoy food. And that was a hell of a Saturday, man.
Yes, that was epic time.
And I don't know. I mean, have you guys unlocked all the characters and stages and all that?
I've got all the characters unlocked. I don't think all the stages yet. I haven't put as much obsessive time into it.
Well, let me ask you this. I think I know. Hours. I bet you I know why. You probably have almost everything. But if you have not completed the challenge wall,
then that's
what's holding you back. Because something kicks in when you complete. You don't get the stage for completing that, but you'll know what I'm talking about when it comes.
I got two more challenges on that to accomplish. And I just can't quite get them.
Have you used any hammers?
No.
You should, because
is that is that the only challenge wall?
No.
Okay.
However, hammers do not transfer to the other challenge walls.
Oh.
So, honestly,
I know that now, because now I've been wasting my time.
One of them is probably the one that I was stuck on, which was like the costumes or collecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just use it on that and not wait, because you could be on, you know, working towards other challenges, or you probably have a ton already unlocked from the next range. And so once you do that, it'll kick open the next challenge wall, and then anything you've already done will activate, so at least you don't have to redo it or something.
Okay.
And then you have a chance to unlock some more things there. So, yeah, don't be afraid. Unless you want to be able to, like, show people in line at Best Buy. Like, hey, look at this, man. I've got three hammers there. But no one's going to care.
Oh, so,
it's bragging rights.
I had my suspicion that the challenge wall, there was more to just the wall than just the first one, but I wasn't sure, so.
Yeah, they're incredibly basic. I think it was a non-mastermind who tipped me off, and I'm glad he did. Or whoever did, because I too was kind of just waiting there till, you know, hopefully I'd get that last one, and then it was pretty awesome. Just use the hammer and be done with it. But so that said, let's start with the roster. How do you guys feel about this?
It's an amazing roster, really.
It's 49 characters.
That's a lot of characters.
Which is
plus how many different kind of Miis you can make?
Yeah, infinite. So. It's infinite characters.
Where else can I have a game where Morgan Freeman fights me with a sword?
Yeah, I've had Obama, you know, punching me around. That's not really cool. I got Iron Man, and I don't have too many Miis on my system. I need to get more.
I had a little Mac. I had a little Mac Mii I made in my Wii years back that I, for fun, I made him a gunner.
Well played.
I don't know why that's funny. You should have a gun in the next punch out.
That game would be so much easier.
It could be called like bitch out, and then he just runs around saying like, hey, don't bitch on him. He can be a gangbanger.
Oh, gun. Man. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it's an expansive... to note on those Miis, there's, yeah, like you said, there's the gunner, there's the sword fighter, there's the brawler, there's three different types of that. And yeah, they're kind of referencing old or other characters, but still, it is a pretty awesome roster. It's missing a few characters from past games, which may or may not upset some people. I guess where to start? I mean, we could do a whole 40-minute segment on the characters alone. So, not to to rush through this, but
I'm surprised Agatha the Bug Girl was in the game. She just keeps showing up.
Yeah, yeah. That's and her bug was a character. That was weird.
Yeah,
just a beetle. It just sat there. It was like a Goldeen, or no Magikarp or something. Or no, yeah, it is Goldeen that flops around. Chris, who is your favorite character right now?
My favorite character for a long time has been Sheik. I've been a fan of Sheik since Melee, obviously, and I used to be able to play both Zelda and Sheik.
Yeah, well, how do you feel about the split?
Well. They made Sheik a little stronger, so it makes up for the fact that she loses the powerhouse side of her. but still not quite strong enough. And her replacement moves for the teleport, it's kind of interesting, but kind of hard to hit. And there's another one, they replaced her whip with a weird black hole bomb thing that kind of is hard to use well. So most of my playing her is a lot of just physical attacking, getting people in the air.
Were you ever good with the whip, though? I mean, I could never use it, like, meaningfully.
I could do pretty good work with it.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, I spent a whole lot of time. Sheik was my main for the time I maxed out Smash Brothers Melee by myself. So.
Plus, he's really a big fan of Super Castlevania 4, so he's already
It all comes together.
So there you go.
The makes a lot more sense. Been made.
Yep.
Synapses are firing.
Yep.
So Grant, then what would be your favorite character so far?
I've actually kind of got two. I'm really happy with how they handled the third party characters, specifically Mega Man and Pac-Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mega Man, obviously, we're all excited about him since the day he was announced, and I think they did a really good job with him. It takes a little bit of getting used to because he's really a projectile heavy character.
Right.
And Smash is kind of a more up in your face kind of fighting or brawler kind of game. So it takes a different kind of strategy to use him, but once you find out how to use him, he's really, really good.
Yeah, that's been my problem. I haven't really figured that out.
Yeah, it definitely takes some time. There's a huge learning curve with Mega Man, which is very appropriate since his games take a lot of quite a learning curve as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pac-Man is just fun. Like everything they've done with his moveset, the references to other games. Just everything about his Final Smash. Everything about it, they just did a really, really good job. They made a really good use out of that character and the license.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I think Pac-Man is definitely one of mine. I said this in the thread, too. I just didn't expect to love him that much. But he's so much fun to use, and he's got such great of a nostalgic edge. He's probably got one of the better nostalgic edges, honestly, than other characters.
Yeah.
And I guess since we're talking, spoilerific stuff here, the only one that seems to come close might be the Duck Hunt dog.
Ah, yes.
Which is one of the most, like, what the hell kind of moments I think Smash Bros. Has ever had.
His final smash is awesome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, I'm more surprised that he showed up, he and his buddy Duck, I guess. I don't know what they're called. But even more than, like, Solid Snake being in Brawl. Like, this was so out of left field.
Yeah, like, who expected this dog that everyone hates from 20 years ago to come back? It's a playable character in Smash. Who saw that coming?
Yeah, for sure. But it's great. I mean, he's actually pretty fun to play as. He too takes a bit of a learning curve, I think, to learn. Because he's got ranges or weapons and attacks that are kind of long range, but they progressively get longer or they're hard to aim. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I found his Smash attack, just his normal attack Smash.
Mm-hmm.
Not all that powerful. Like, it'll hit a couple of times, but I'm finding it really hard to knock people, like, way off the stage with them.
Yeah, I've had that problem, too. When I was playing, I don't know if it was Classic or All-Star mode with him, he's not very good in that respect.
Found the only move that really gets him to launch characters is that, whatever that kick-the-can move that he does.
Yep, yeah. That's my favorite move that he has.
Yeah.
Just kind of, like, shooting and shooting. And that's what the screenshot today from the Smash Bros. Website is all about. They have a TV, and then they have his character blurred out, and they have a Wii Zapper, or not a Wii Zapper, an NES Zapper, and because it's supposed to be like you're shooting that can, I think.
Yeah. Now, was that... That's not actually part of the game.
No. At least not part of the 3DS. Maybe the Wii U has some sort of weird thing. That screen had to come from somewhere.
Yeah, like...
It could be maybe a trailer moment or something. I don't know. I have no idea.
I wouldn't be surprised if Sakurai is just trolling us again, but still, it's so... Like, I'm looking at the hand, I'm like, is that a real hand, or is that, like, a rendered hand?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Weird.
I think it's rendered, but it is hard to tell the way that the picture looks. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of was crazy. Another major new character was Bowser Jr. And the rest of the crew. I mean,
yes,
that's a key kind of a bonus that I think I'm so glad they did.
You know, it's always great to see the Koopalings back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you have 8 slots for 8 costumes, 1 + 7 totally makes sense, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, even though I don't think we ever saw them in that kind of ship or little
They never been in the clown car.
Yeah, that's what it's called. Yeah, yeah. But it still works.
Well, they've been in the clown car itself in New Super Mario Brothers 2.
Okay. I didn't remember that, but...
Yeah, they attack you on your final approach to Bowser,
mm-hmm.
and they're all in the clown car, and they try to like flash you with their wand, and it turns the Mario Brothers to stone, and they'll drop you into the lava.
Mm.
So you have to hide behind the walls.
Okay, I remember that now.
Yeah. Okay. That was like the very end part of New Super Mario Brothers 2.
So it's canon, all right.
It's canon.
But it's still cool. I'm just loving all the variety we have here. Rosalina and Luma... Even Greninja is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Greninja.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's actually a decent character.
Mm-hmm. I maybe could have done with him and maybe gotten rid of Lucario, perhaps, or something, or kept Mewtwo and got rid of Lucario.
Yes, why is Lucario still in this game?
I was playing some Melee not too long ago, and I kind of did miss Mewtwo after playing that, but still, it's a really well-rounded cast. I don't think that they've really made any glaring omissions besides the... You know, of course, there's certain characters we love from the past, but as far as like new characters they could have included, it's really well rounded.
You know who I found really good, but it's kind of a controversial choice, is Dark Pit.
Yeah, that's going to segue into our next topic, but
yeah.
So what separates Dark Pit from Pit? Because I'm just frustrated by the it's not very. All over the place. There's only a few instances, really. But, yeah, there is some duplicate action going on. There really isn't much of a difference between the two.
There isn't. The only one that's majorly different is his side special smash.
Mm-hmm.
Pit uses a different kind of club move, and Dark Pit's is electric. And it has a shorter range than Pit's,
mm-hmm.
but the impact is way more powerful. And I found I've been able to catch people off guard with that more than I ever had with Pit before.
Mm-hmm. And why that could have been like a move exchange, because we have customizable moves here, so...
Yeah.
It's and, just frustrating to me.
Yeah. Well, and Pit, Dark Pit's final smash is also different, too.
Okay, I haven't experienced that yet. So fair enough on that. I don't know if that would justify it for me, but...
Does it just look different, or does it actually...
No, it's very different.
Yeah. Okay.
So it relates to his character.
Yeah, I guess. I don't really know what the character is outside of being a dark version of a character, but it's...
Boo this man!
What, well, you haven't played Uprising?
I have not played Uprising.
Oh, you should play that game.
Me either.
Oh my gosh, all of
Boo
you
Boo these game. Men!
Boo these people! What is wrong with you?
Hey, you know what I have played, though? Is Dr. Mario. And, in the last podcast that we were all on, I was defending, I think... The idea of having Dr. Mario as a separate character,
yep.
I would probably turn back on that now, because I don't see why he couldn't have had all of his attributes, including maybe a slightly stronger move or whatever, just tied to a costume change. You know, he could have been the eighth costume in the same way that, Bowser Jr. gets completely different characters for his. And just make Dr. Mario a costume change, and then, of course, his fireballs become the pills, and... And then, I don't know, I was playing with him today, and he also, just like with Mario's cape, he can, spin you around, or he can, do all these...
Yeah, but he's not just a costume change. He is, distinctly slower and faster.
And is down...
Or not faster. Stronger.
He's stronger and slower.
Yeah.
His
he's
down
slow, stronger.
His down special is different.
His down is the Mario's old down B.
Mm.
The spin.
Yeah. And his up special, it only hits once rather than multiple times like Mario.
You can't play Mario and Dr. Mario the same, pretty much.
Not exactly the same.
Okay, but I guess I just don't see why those can be customizable move sets again.
They could have made them both identical and gotten rid of Flood for Mario, because I don't think that's
necessary.
No one likes
Flood.
Nobody does. Even the tips in the game says, this doesn't do anything, but it might confuse your enemies.
Right.
No, it won't.
Well, the one good thing about the flood thing is that if you use it against someone who's trying to recover back onto the stage,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of push them further away from the ledge,
right.
and it won't reset their up special attack.
Right.
Whereas if you attack them,
the gust jar or the gust bellows.
Right. Yeah. But that's the one good thing I can think about that attack. Everything else about it sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I love Dr. Mario, and I probably prefer playing as him over Mario himself, but I feel like it just could have been combined somehow.
I would actually agree with you, Steven, and here's how it would have to work. Make him a costume swap for Mario, so long as Mario doesn't have Flood.
Right.
Yeah. And then it'd be perfect.
You know, I think that, yeah, considering Flood was used in just one game, not that other things aren't referenced from just one game, but they could have done something else, you know, for that, for sure.
Seriously.
You know, so between that and then Dark Pit and Pit, I definitely think that could have been done in a costume swap.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel? Well, okay, Falco and Fox, I mean, they play differently as well in the same kind of vein. Do you think that they should have been just made a costume swap in the end? Maybe throw Wolf in there too? Or do you like those guys separate?
I wouldn't have minded if Falco and Fox were just a costume change, so long as we got Wolf in with a different Final Smash.
Right. You know, have you tested, is the Landmaster the same Final Smash for them both?
Yeah.
Ah, see, that's annoying.
Yeah.
I just don't like that.
Especially since Falco is so opposed to going in the Landmaster in Star Fox 64.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a line in there where Fox is like, hey, Falco, why don't you come down here? And he's like, I'll stick to the skies, thanks. But he uses the Landmaster.
See, what if the Landmaster formed and then Falco shoots it down or something and just, like, destroys it because he doesn't want to be in it?
Oh, yeah, and the huge explosion blows everyone away. Yeah, that could work.
That'd be funny. Okay. You know, the one pairing that I would have the hardest time kind of agreeing with getting rid of would be removing Toon Link. But
yeah,
I kind of prefer Toon Link over Link.
Yeah, but they are also very distinctively different.
Yeah,
too.
Okay.
You can't play Link the same you play Toon Link.
Right.
It's just a matter of anything.
Yep, agreed.
So, I mean, that would be the one that I wouldn't want to try to finagle. Shulk, I guess let's mention him really quick, and then let's move on to some other topics.
What a bunch of jokers!
You guys like playing as Shulk?
I haven't played with him that much. Kind of a hard time figuring out how to use like his color kanji shape thing.
Yeah.
That
because
you don't know what they really mean because they don't think he says anything about them.
No, you can look online. There's only, like, five of them, so you can just learn by the colors.
Yeah.
But each one, like, either changes his speed or his attack or his defense, kind of like, you know, Smash Run or something, all those different attributes and in different combinations. So he could be useful, yeah, but you got to know that stuff. You'll want him to be fast, and you'll make him just super slow, and then, you know, he'll be smoked. But I think he's a very good entry into the series. He makes way more sense than, say, Snake did.
Yeah. Yeah, I like using him. I'm not all that good with him. I don't have that much experience with the character just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm very happy that he's in the game, though. That's cool.
And, Joe, do you have any comments about the cast of these characters? Or anyone in particular you're excited to sink your teeth into? Or?
Duck Hunt Dog. I don't even know. See, I'm not worried about spoilers or anything, but I have been kind of just avoiding information just so that whatever I don't happen to see by the time I play the game is new to me. So I'm really interested to see how you even play with Duck Hunt Dog, because I haven't even watched video of it or anything like that. So, yeah.
Well, I'll give you a pixel by pixel. Yeah, I think it'll be.
But I didn't know so much of this. Like, I didn't even know Dark Pit was a wholly separate character.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, I'm intrigued by, just because I love, you know, Kid Icarus Uprising so much.
Yeah, man, you got, you know, Palutena, Kid Icarus, and Dark Pit. So you got more representation for you.
And when you said 49 characters, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Does that include all the Koopalings separately?
No.
It has to.
Nope.
What?
Mm-mm.
Wow.
Yeah, the Koopalings are all just the same.
Well, I knew that you just rotated through Bowser Jr.,
yep.
Is it? But I didn't... Okay. Oh, that's a lot of characters.
They are just costumes. They have no
strengths
or weaknesses.
Yeah, but as far as the actual count, yep, that's.
So then, who is not returning? You can just tell me.
Ice climbers.
Okay, that I knew.
Snake.
Right, that wasn't a surprise.
Ooh, who's the
wolf?
Yeah, wolf's missing.
No one cares.
It's hard for me to say without.
Did all of the Earthbound people make it back? Because I know that was
Lucas isn't back.
Okay.
Yeah, Pokemon Trainer is not in it either.
Right.
So that means no Ivysaur or Squirtle.
Right, they broke out Charizard, right?
I did like playing as those three characters and switching between them. But
it was a nifty idea.
Fun. Yeah, and Charizard's, he's fun on his own. Jigglypuff is back. Although I feel like she's possibly been nerfed a little bit, or she's harder to use. But,
if
you know.
The character already has the consistency of nerf. Can't really.
She's made of nerf.
Going back to Duck Hunt Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Does it work? How does it attack? I know I could just watch a video, but I.
Well, I mean, I think it's.
It references a lot of light gun games.
Yeah.
Okay.
His attacks are basically someone off screen. He basically has someone off screen shoot you.
Oh my god.
It's kind of funny using a zapper. Then he uses wild gunman characters.
Okay.
The
new
shootout type deal.
And then clay shooting.
He can.
Mm-hmm. There was a clay pigeon.
Clay pigeons.
Yes. I remember when I discovered that that game was even an option in Duck Hunt, and I was like, it felt like I got a brand new game for free.
Right.
All right. That's cool. All right, I'll let you guys return to your informed discussion.
Okay. I mean, you know, we can keep talking about this, and we're going to continue to talk about these characters and stuff as the Wii U one comes out.
Right.
You know, we have there's so much to cover, it's really impossible. We probably should have just had a solely dedicated episode to it, but, you know, what the hell, we got other things to talk about, too. Let's move on to the stages, because that's another kind of key facet. I mean, you could really define Smash Bros. As characters in stages with items. Go. You know, I mean, those are kind of the things there that make up the Smash formula. Let's once again kind of generally just ask the guests here. I mean, how do you feel about the stage selection? I feel like the quantity's a little light. Honestly, and there's quite a few. There's over 30, but I still feel like not everything's represented. I wish every character at least had their one stage, which might be the case in the Wii U version. Maybe it's a limitation of the cart, you know. But
do you think that's just like a obvious DLC thing? Have they even stated if that's happening or not?
There's been clues in the code of DLC coming, but we don't know what it would be. And I don't think that there's omissions that would be, oh, here's what, you know, this would be DLC.
But don't you think stages would probably be the easiest thing that they would do?
Yeah, it wouldn't require, you know, rebalancing the game like a new character would. So, absolutely. And maybe there's more when you connect it to the Wii U or something, but I really can't tell.
Indeed.
Corneria is back, which is one of the top eight. Although they've made some weird decisions, I think, with bringing some ones back. Like Mushroomy Kingdom.
I don't like that stage.
Who the fuck okayed that decision?
Yeah, that is not a fun
I still
stage.
Don't get that stage. What?
It could be, too. I just hate that it's like the desolate, like, dead version of it. If it was like the Super Mario, maybe like, if it was as colorful as like Super Mario World or something, and then maybe a little more lively, with maybe it had actual enemies, like you played through the first stage, but you were fighting, that'd be cool. But if it's just a dead version of it, you know,
it's like if Sony put out Super Mario Brothers on PlayStation 4. That's the kind of look they were going for.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's brown and gray.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just didn't get that at all. So that was kind of a bummer. Glad to see Green Hill Zone back as far as old stages. Although I kind of wish that they would develop a new Sonic stage.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I wish they had a new one for Sonic.
Like, I love that stage, and then I was playing it today and looking at the screenshot again right now. I do wish it was different. Like, the loop is cool, and I like that it breaks off, but give me Oil Ocean Zone or something. Give me something new.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Hey.
Or how about something from Lost World or something that was on Colors or something like that was exclusive to the, you know, Nintendo consoles?
Yeah, I'm more up-to-date. You don't have to go retro anymore. I'd be fine with that. Flat Zone 2 is back, and I don't know what's different than Flat Zone 1, but, you know, it's fun to have that stage back. Yoshi's Island is back, which they've
That's
had
a
that
good
in,
stage.
In every... they've had a variant of Yoshi's Island in pretty much every game. This one is pretty good. I do like playing on this one. It looks good. Jungle Japes is back, and then there's Distant Planet, which is another example where I wish that they would just make a new level for this franchise. I don't really care for Distant Planet too much. For Pikmin.
Pikmin.
I say Pikmin, damn it.
Next time you say Pikmin, I'm going to come over there, I'm going to kick you in the deek.
Well, when you come over there to kick me in the deek, we'll play some Smash Brothers. How about that?
All right, we'll settle it in Smash.
Yeah. In fact, we'll make Miis that look like deeks, and then we'll have them kick each other. We'll see what happens.
Never mind, I'm out.
Okay. Yeah, but I really wish... I don't... You know, it's not even that, you know, it's got the rainfall. I kind of like the general theme, but that creature that comes up and wants to eat you, nobody ever falls in his mouth. He's not a hazard at all. And it's just like wasted space. It's just an open pit. They could do a little bit more with what they have going on. And after Pikmin 3, you're going to make me emphasize it every time I say it now. Or when that game came out, they kind of opened up a door to have, you know, more stuff. I think the stages... Is there not a new stage for it, though, in the Wii U version? Have we seen screens of something different? Or am I... I think we have.
I think so.
So, I mean, I guess they didn't want to try to do a Wii U game stage on the 3DS, but they should have tried anyway. Let's... Oh, yeah, and then WarioWare Inc. is back, which is fine. I feel like that's just another version of PictoChat.
Yeah, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with that stage.
Yeah, me too. And in this one, I feel like things don't happen fast enough. A lot of my matches don't even involve anything unique. At least
slowed down.
Yeah, I think they might have slowed down a little bit. But then again, I've played more Smash Run or, you know, like All-Star Mode and stuff than actual long just Smash battles. But let's talk about the new stages though, and I'll let you guys start this off. What comes to mind when I say awesome new stages?
Mute City.
Okay, you know what? The two M's, and I would have to agree with both of them. They're freaking incredible stages. let's start with Magikant first.
That is a cool stage.
Earthbound reference. Yeah.
Well, actually, it's more of a mother reference because the world is modeled more after the Magikant in Earth and Mother than Earthbound.
Okay. Okay.
Which it throws in some Earthbound references, like the Flying Man is from Earthbound. That model is from Earthbound.
Right.
And it has, you know, the background tears that are from both Mother and Earthbound.
That Flying Man was the he was the bane of my existence when I was fighting Steven the other day.
And like the Dungeon Man from Earthbound shows up. That's all kind of cool. It's a cool stage too, so yeah.
Yeah, the music's pretty good in it, too.
Oh, music is beautiful.
Yeah, it was absolutely one of the greatest surprises, I think, because I had no knowledge of this stage before I turned my system on. And I think Ness was one of the first characters I unlocked, so this kind of came right naturally. And it's great. It makes me want to play Earthbound and Mother, so that's a good thing. The Flying Man, though, he is overpowered, and he does show up too often. I wouldn't even have a big deal with him if he didn't always show up in the same spot.
Yeah.
He's always on the right side. I hug that side when I can because you don't want to have him against you. It's not that I want him on my team. I just don't want him against me.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So if he showed up on the left side, and even on that small little platform, that would be crazy because you're all trying to safely jump up to it, you know, that one underneath because you can't drop down through the main platform. It's rigid solid, so... You know, it'd be, you know, a possible upgrade they could do. I don't know if they're going to really patch things and refine stages, but Let's go on a Moot City, not Moot. The most pointless stage ever, Moot City. No, Moot City, that's a really cool way to do an F-Zero stage.
Yeah, it's always nice to see some F-Zero representation. They took it back to the old school original version. You know, the music's good, the action's tight, you know, the moving platforms and everything. It's just a really well done stage.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't really know when certain platforms are going to leave you. I mean, I guess there's the two floating ones, but as far as the cars are concerned, you know, sometimes I think the yellow one might stay on the screen and the blue one might go away and vice versa. And they happen really fast, so you have to be on your toes.
Right, right.
It's incredibly well done. It's like a souped up version of the one where they just had the main platform that would float along the track. I don't remember what that one was called.
Oh, was that in Brawl?
Yeah.
Big Blue.
Okay, that might be it. And that one was fun, but you're just stuck on the flat platform. Nothing really happens. I think occasionally cars would shoot by you, right? But this is much better. I'd rather not avoid these vehicles, and I'd rather just fight around them. So
yeah, fight on top of them.
Mm-hmm. And then the graphics look really spectacular as well.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, the old school like 8-bit and 16-bit sprites look really good on the 3DS screen.
Mm-hmm. No, I love this. All the Mode 7-ish looking they got on there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's one thing I love is Mode 7.
Definitely.
You know, and then to change pace from those graphics, I'm going to say that 3D Land is one of my favorite stages in the game. And despite it being a moving stage, I still find myself liking it a lot.
Yeah, that is a really good stage, too.
It's beautiful looking. It's actually pretty fun. Every chunk of the moving stage is kind of different. And in fact, when you're floating through that one section and then the little gray things either shoot up or move, things the platforms will move differently every time, depending on just how things go.
Right, right.
So that's that's awesome. What else stands out to you? A lot of these do. I mean, I could just list them off. I'm trying to.
The Pac-Man stage is really good.
Yeah, you know, that's like a better version of 75M to me, because it's a bit more refined. I think 75M was the Donkey Kong one from Brawl, which was really cool to see, yeah. But in practice, it wasn't really that fun. And this one is much better.
And I like the gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
You get your eat enough power pellets or whatever, you get a slight upgrade for a bit.
Yep, and you can even eat the ghosts and everything, or like at least knock them away when normally they would hurt you. So that's really great. I like Tortimer Island. It's a pretty basic stage. There's not a lot of stuff going on. I think the shark's supposed to be able to hurt you, but I haven't seen how that works. I know that if you hang out on a captain's boat, he'll drive off with you, but most of the action stays in the center. But just to have an excuse to play that music and to have that locale, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous stage.
And I agree. That's another favorite.
And it does change. The geography will manipulate itself a little bit. Not while you're playing, but as you go into it periodically. So sometimes there's a pond in the center and sometimes there isn't, and trees are laid out differently. Sometimes the tree will be for this fruit or that fruit, or it's very good at representing what its source is.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't notice that before.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the screenshot in front of me right now is of the pond, but I swear I've played without it. So keep an eye out for that. And if I'm crazy, then someone tell me. But how do you guys feel about Guar Plains?
Interesting stage.
Yeah, I don't like having that huge gap in the middle.
It's such a air stage because you got such small platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a good character who's good in the air, you're kind of in trouble in that stage.
It's kind of like this game's Electroplankton, you know, because that stage on Brawl was, the platforms were so undefined and so small, there was a lot of maybe air fighting, or at least jumping around back and forth. And this, you do that a lot too, but I kind of like it. It's just because it's the sole one that's like it. There's nothing else that really meets it, so I can accept it.
Yeah, the computer cannot play it at all.
No, that's also kind of funny. Yeah, that is. Maybe that shows a failure in the design, but let's see. There's a Spirit Train. That's a pretty fun one.
That's okay.
I like the aesthetic perhaps more than the actual gimmicks and stuff itself. But I like that the back of the train changes and
yeah, the different bomb trains and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, different things happen. It is kind of this game's pirate ship, but it's not as good as Pirate Ship.
Well, what about the Paper Mario stage?
Well, yes, there's a pirate ship in there because it references it from the second game, I think, is what that ship's from. But that's really... I like that one a lot. I know a lot of people hate the third phase of that stage.
Oh, with the rotating Bowser head?
Yeah. And, I mean, I've had my own share of troubles there, but how do you guys feel about that?
I kind of like that it's so random. Yeah, it does keep you on your toes.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what were you saying?
Nothing. I just think it's going to keep you on your toes instead of, you know...
Mm-hmm. You know, did you guys know that if you jump onto the pipe, it just kind of bounces you?
Yeah, it blows you up. Yeah,
that's interesting.
I thought maybe you could go in it somehow, but...
What if you could go in it and then you could... or maybe maybe in the galaxy stage, you can go inside and then come out the other side?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
I can't believe they haven't made a galaxy stage yet where you're, you know, fighting on an orb.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to be coming in the Wii U version.
Yeah, is
the
there? Version. Is there that stage like that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You play on Mario's ship, you know, the thing that's shaped like his head. You play on that.
The face ship?
Yeah, I think you play on the face ship. And so, essentially, it is a sphere. That or... I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
It'd be cool if it was something like Brinstar Depths, but without the rotation. You could just be everywhere.
I think that's what it's maybe supposed to be, because there's, what stage is it? That you can... Okay, Balloon Fight. You can actually run from left to right through and you have to be smashed away. So I could see them doing that with the Galaxy stage, where you can't really run off the stage, but you can be smashed off.
Yeah.
So...
I hate that Balloon Fight stage, by the way.
Yeah, I like the idea of Balloon Fight so much, but I hate the game and the franchise and everything about it, kind of.
Yeah, it's hard to move around in that stage, and so you got that fish that comes up and bites you. It's hard.
You just like the phrase Balloon Fight.
I like the phrase Balloon Fight, and I like the pixels.
You make Sakurai all sad. Not Sakurai, Iwata all sad. Oh, it's like his first game.
He had his hands in that, huh? Well, it shows.
Ooh.
Snap.
Son of a bitch.
He's going to shove his foot directly into my ass.
Iwata's going to come and be all congenial to you.
Please understand. I must kill you now.
Oh, man. There's so many other words we can touch upon. Let's try to move on. Actually, shoot. Time-wise, Joe, do you have to get out of here?
Let's do one more topic.
One more topic, okay. You know, maybe that's all we really have left. I guess let's talk about this. I haven't really done any online. Have you guys?
I've done a bit.
Okay, how was
my
that?
My first experiences were they were kind of slaggy. It felt like every time I moved a little bit, it didn't really feel like it was working well.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started playing with some of my friends, and it moved, you know, pretty darn smoothly. It wasn't, you know, super smooth. It wasn't like playing, you know, against your friend right next to you.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't super smooth, brothers. Playable.
Super smooth, brothers.
Pikmin. They should make that game.
Let's just say it wasn't feeling like I was doing my move, and then it had happened about a second later or something like that.
Okay. You know, I'm doing the tournament that we have going on now. And I've got to talk to Paleo to see when in the next couple of days we can fight. I'm a little concerned about it. But, I mean, my internet, you know, I moved out towards the country, and my download speed's kind of all right still, but my upload took a big hit from what I'm used to. And I'm just hoping that it uploads my information fast enough to get to him. And I guess we'll see. I haven't had a chance to honestly play online, so maybe I should do that too, even before I play tournament stuff.
I was actually able to play.
Yeah,
be better like against somebody around the world, because I think my first few plays were against people from like Japan or something like that,
mm-hmm.
where you know way more distance.
Yeah, Grant and I can attest that playing locally runs great.
Yeah, it's totally fine, and I mean it was only just you know one on one with us, but I've had I've had my buddies over, and we've had you know 3 and 4 player matches locally, and we've had no issues whatsoever. I have played I've played a decent amount online so far. I would say 90% of my matches have been either lag free or so relatively lag free that it's not even worth. You could barely tell.
Yeah. Well, and has it been consistent lag when you've seen that, or has it just been jitters?
It would jitter. It wouldn't be throughout the entire match.
Okay.
It would pause for a second. Sometimes, like, that loading ball would come up, but then the rest of the match would be fine. And I think only, like, a couple of times it's been completely unplayable. And usually, like, I'll find out, like, you know, somebody's running Netflix, you know, in my house, and it's like, oh, well, that's why, you know, my bandwidth is being all taken up.
Right.
I'm kind of curious, though, because I got the Hero of Hyrule's Smash Brothers tournament happening right now.
Yep.
And my first opponent is PokeFreak911.
Yep, the Australian.
Yeah, so I'm going to be playing an online match literally across the world. So
just go take a trip out there. At least get close to you know, where he lives. And
I'm not going back to Australia, man. That place is scary.
No, you can play on the back of a spider.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, you know, let me know how that goes. Because, again, I just had to play Paleo, who I think is in the south.
He's in North Carolina.
Okay, yep. So, yeah, kind of the southeastern coast a little bit. And not even that far south for me. But, you know, so we're in the same time zone. Let's just put it that way. So that's good. I know we have a lot of Canadian negative worlders who kind of span both sides of the coast. And so, yeah, we'll see how this works out for us. Tying into that a little bit is the modes. This is the last thing I want to talk about here. How do you guys feel about, I guess, the content mode-wise in this game? And in particular, the 3DS-specific Smash Run, which is kind of the bulk new mode. And, I mean, does... Can the game rest its laurels on that? I mean, Chris, we'll go start with you.
It's an interesting mode. I played it a few times, but I'm kind of unsure of what things do. Things don't really seem to affect your ability much one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really delved into it all that much. So.
And Grant?
Yeah, well, I'm very happy with all the modes that are available in the game. I think it's very content rich, so I have no complaints there. I'll be playing this game for years, I'm thinking. And specifically to Smash Run, at first I thought I didn't really like it, but now I've gone back through it a couple of times. It's very loot heavy. It's very kind of grindy in that way. Mm-hmm. And just collecting new power-ups and, you know, special trophies and, you know, what's that equipment that they put on the Miis? Is it just called equipment?
Yeah.
So picking up the equipment and stuff. You know, unlocking stuff through there, it's actually kind of rewarding that way. So I kind of like it.
All right, well then, from my perspective, I've played through it with every single character to the point of winning with each character. So I've played through multiple times if I didn't win. And that's one of those stupid boxes in the challenges, so I did that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, not that it's that hard to do. You have to get lucky sometimes. Sometimes I would get a lot of loot, and it just so happens that I didn't get a lot of the jumping loot, and then my challenge wouldn't be a fight, but it would be racing to the top of a tower. And it's like, oh, well, shit, I'm no good here. Or even, you know, horizontally, when you don't have a lot of speed and you have to race people and run. But, in fact, there was a time where it was like 400ths of a second or something that I won, because when a character's running past you, they can't actually overtake you for a while. And so we were right near the goal, and I was ahead, and they were running way, they were way faster than I was, but I was holding them back, just because as long as they didn't jump or stop, I would still be in the lead, and that was kind of awesome. But
you didn't turn around and smash them away real quick?
No, because they were so close to me that by doing that, I would have missed them.
Oh, man.
But and had I waited till they were at like a right moment, I just would have ran risking losing my position. Because I would do that sometimes, too. So I played Smash Run quite a bit, and I too was not really digging it at first, and then when I went to do it with every character, I was actually having a lot of fun. There are a few like enemies that I really can't effing stand, like the car.
Which
may be invincible even, I'm not sure. But it is so brutal and so, it hunts you down so much that it's just, it makes it unfun, and it's frustrating when you spend a good 30 seconds just being beat around. Because you're stuck in this loop of, like, three really heavy-duty characters kind of smashing into you. But, besides that flaw, it does work pretty well for, you know, it's not the Subspace Emissary, but...
which is good.
I mean, I enjoyed the concept of that game, but I can see where the gameplay didn't really mesh with how the characters move, and I think the way that the characters move now fits better with this mode. I feel like I'm pretty agile going through the stage. There's a lot of cool secrets and, you know, Donkey Kong barrels that'll shoot you to a new segment and that kind of stuff. Again, it is fun collecting as much as you can just to see if you get anything new. So it's almost like a lottery or something, but you spend more time in it. I would say that I wish that there was, now that I've played it so much, I wish there was another map or two. To limit it just to that one is kind of disappointing. Even though it is kind of big, but I don't know. I kind of would like something new to play. Maybe they could do that in the future with a patch or a DLC or something, but at this point I'm not sure if I would actually want to pay for a DLC of that nature. But and now that I've beaten it with every character, I can't say that I would want to go back in and play it a lot, but I can see myself being, you know, not interested in playing, you know, just a random match, especially if I had no one else to play with, but I could be like, eh, you know, let's do some Smash running. Because it does change it up quite a bit, because sometimes you'll have a standard match, sometimes you'll have a lipstick match, where everyone's got the lipstick on them, or a bunny hood match, or you're racing each other through an obstacle course and you're trying to get to the finish. And it's not just a straight race where just the fastest character wins. I mean, there's a bunch of caverns, and if you hit certain things, it's an insta-kill, and then you get set back a little bit. And that's actually where, even if you're slower, you can still win those races, because the computer will sometimes hit them. And then there's the race up the tower, and it's a pretty elaborate mode, and I would say that it's a worthy addition. And I kind of would like to see it on the Wii U, honestly. That's how good of a mode I think it is. But... as we'll hopefully find out tomorrow, you know, maybe there's something exclusive to the Wii U that we can get excited about. That rumored board game mode, if that's even a real thing, but and whatever that might be, if that's anything like Mario Party's board game mode, the very first Mario Party, I'd be kind of digging it, but not sure how that would work.
We should try some multiplayer Smash Run next time we meet up, Steven.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we could do that. You know, I think that's where maybe the mode shines better. I haven't played it like that, but you don't even though you can see other characters on the map in terms of the actual map itself, if you were to go to the same place, you wouldn't be able to see them there. So you do kind of have this feeling of separation. And at least if there was someone else doing it, I would know that they have the same kind of general strategy and concepts that I do. And it would feel a little bit more engaging to have another human player there. Even if we still won't run into each other, because then you'd end up fighting each other probably just nonstop. In the
right.
So I get why they would keep them separate, but... Chris, any thoughts about this?
Like I said, I played it just a little bit, so I don't really have a huge opinion on the Smash Run thing. It's, like I said, it's cool, but I spend most of my time playing Home Run mode.
Okay.
Nice. Which, I love that mode.
You know what? That I'm glad that's back. That is fun. The one thing I will say, that the new target mode is not what I kind of wish was in there.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. It's like, you know, Angry Birds, but it's it doesn't feel like I have as much control over what I'm doing. So it doesn't feel nearly as challenging as like actually breaking the targets or something.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the hell out of, especially Melee, but Brawl too. Just refining my runs to those break the target stages, so that's kind of an omission. But I give them, you know, an A for effort.
What do you guys think of the other 3DS exclusive mode?
Which one, Trophy Rush or?
No, the Street Pass.
Oh,
the little disc game.
Yeah,
I've
played it once.
I've never lost in it.
Yes, it's super easy, right?
Yeah, but it's kind of a neat thing. It's fun to be like, oh, I got a new one. So I got a new person to smash. I guess that's what you want from it, right? And you get coins and stuff. It's a fun way to just get random coins. So,
were you able to complete the challenges from the challenge board?
No, not yet. I've street passed a little bit, but to like you have to like ricochet into things or knock other people into other people and...
Yeah, you have to knock other people off by using other people as the weapon.
And that seems kind of, like, hard, because takes a while to be set up right.
Yeah, I'm hoping that not this weekend, but next weekend when they open up all the Nintendo hotspots for you know the nationwide thing.
Yep, the Halloween event.
Yeah, hopefully we get lots of Smash Brothers Street Passes because I really want to take advantage of that.
Oh yeah, I've already gotten a ton myself just from normal use, so I'm sure that that thing's going to unlock a lot. But, you know, last thing I'll say, and then we should probably close up shop. I mean, I got to get to bed, and I know Joe does too, and it's getting kind of late here. But I'm loving the trophies. I'm glad they're all back, and I like what they have to say. I think they look great as models, and that trophy mode where you kind of break things and earn coins and out of the whole mini game, that's pretty fun, actually. And the fact that you can use your 3DS coins to buy them sometimes is nice, because I don't really have a reason to use those anymore right now. So I'll occasionally just, you know, spend 10, 20 coins so I have something to walk with my 3DS and earn more coins for. So,
what are you talking about? You got to fill up your puzzle swap.
Oh, I have all the normal pieces. I'm just waiting on pinks.
No, there's a new one that just came out today.
You know what? My blue light came on just an hour or two ago, so I do have that now, yes.
Yeah.
I didn't have it this morning or anything, so I will do that. It'll take me, like, a day or two, probably, to get all those, so. You know, when that runs out again, you give me something to do, so.
Cool.
But hopefully, you know, we've satisfied everyone at home for Smash Bros. Talk. I know there's so much more we could discuss, but, you know, we'll do that soon. We'll have a lot more to say just next episode, so. With that, we'll wrap it up. You know, Joe and I would really appreciate if you commented on what you've heard, you know, on the show, especially with such an awesome set of topics as the games we've discussed today, not just Smash Brothers, but all of them. And you can do that if you go to negativeworld.org. Just hop over to the site, find the thread associated with the episode, and just tell us what you thought, you know, about all the things we said, and, you know, make some thoughts and things said of your own.
Indeed.
Yeah, see, there you go. Both hosts agree. It's a unanimous thought.
Yep.
If you're not a subscriber and you don't feel like subscribing to Negative World, thank you for listening anyway. you can reach us through the Facebook page. Just simply got to search for negativeworld.org. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @negative_world. And, you know, thanks again to the listeners. And thank you, Joe. Thank you to Chris and Grant for another great episode. And, you know, I appreciate you guys stopping by once more.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yep, I was glad to be here again.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll make this a thing, you know, every, it's been like, what, 6 months? Every 6 months we'll make sure to have you guys on, specifically. although, hopefully you guys will want to show up even sooner than that, so. In fact, you know, Chris, you were the first to speak up. I appreciate you, you know, letting me know about your availability. I'm glad to have you on.
If I'm on, if I'm able to be on, I'm glad to be on.
Cool.
Okay, so like Wayne and Garth once said, on the streets of Aurora, Illinois, game on! And shwing! edit courtesy of Joe Ninsage. Alright, bye.
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 I'm finding myself having almost more of a connection to the Smash Bros. 3DS stages, to be honest with you. But I guess I'll do another interjection. Chris, we're hearing a lot of interference.
Marbles in a cardboard box.
Oh, sorry. I'm drinking water.
Or like a cat in a litter box or something.
Cat in a litter box.
It doesn't sound like drinking water. I don't know what that is.
Maybe my mic got moved closer to my beard.
Oh, that could be it.
Oh, it's the beard. The Duck Dynasty beard is getting in the way.
Okay, that's okay.
Do you have marbles in your beard?
No.
Can you put marbles in your beard?
I could maybe hold a marble or two in my beard.
Nice.
Marble beard zone.
That would be true marble madness.